Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code POOL at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code POOL at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code POOL. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Jussie Smollett will soon be a free man. Court has agreed that he is that he should be released. Why? Because he's appealing, and he would be in jail. He would get out of jail actually after the appeals process ended. So it all seems all just so silly. But this is the reality we live in. We also have this BLM activist who's been indicted on 18 different felony charges for fraud along with her husband. So we'll talk about that. Disney workers are going to be protesting the parental rights and education bill, which makes no sense. As it turns out, the majority of Americans actually support the content, the core of this bill. Of course, we also have stuff happening in Ukraine. So we'll be talking about that as well. Unfortunately, tonight, Ian is sick and will not be joining us. But joining us to talk about this and much more is Terry Schilling. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Tim. Terry Schilling, president of American Principles Project. We are the NRA, but for families. So we don't do guns. We do families. We helped start the anti-transgender sports fight. We started spending a lot of money on campaign ads attacking politicians who were wanting to put boys and girls sports. And what do you know? The American people are against that in a big way. And so we've been working in the states. We've passed pro-women's sports legislation in 11 states now. Iowa's the most recent one. And now that fight's kind of evolving into something even bigger. So we're really happy. It's really necessary. And we're really, really
cool. Proud. We'll talk about that stuff, too, along with everything else. We got Seamus.
Yeah, very excited to be here. I think this is going to be a great conversation. An NRA for families. This this idea that we would actually have a lobby for the family, which is the building block of society. Unbelievable that that's so novel to us. But thank you for the work you're doing. I'm interested in asking you some questions about it. My name is Seamus Coughlin. I have a YouTube channel called Freedom Tunes. We animate educational cartoons and political satire. Every Thursday, we have a cartoon coming out tomorrow about how basically the industrial military complex is constantly trying to use World War II nostalgia to get us involved in new conflicts. I think it's pretty funny, and you guys will like it. So go over there, subscribe, hit the notification bell, and we'll have that up tomorrow.
And I am no excuse for Ian. We will miss his input, definitely, for sure. We'll just carry on in his memory, and I'll try to come up with something wild and crazy in the meantime.
And don't forget, head over to TimCast.com. Become a member if you'd like to support us directly. As a member, you are keeping all of our journalists gainfully employed, and they are all very happy that you're doing so. But you'll also get access to exclusive segments from this show. Around 11 or so p.m. tonight, we will be publishing a members-only podcast segment of this show. It's usually about a half an hour long, and it's kind of the uncensored show. We do swear a lot. It's the non-family-friendly show, so definitely check that out if you would like to support our work. But don't forget to smash that like button, subscribe to this channel, share the show right now if you can. If you take the URL, just post it wherever you can to really, really help us out. Now, let's jump into that first story. Breaking news. Court orders Jussie Smollett released from jail during his appeal after just 6 days in prison. Disgraced Empire actor Jussie Smollett will be released after serving just 6 days. Judges sided with his lawyers, who argued that he would be finished with his sentence before the appeals process was complete. He was sentenced to 150 days after being convicted of 5 felony counts of disorderly conduct for falsely reporting a racist and homophobic attack in 2019. Smollett could have served just 75 days with good behavior. He had been kept in psychiatric care in a restraint bed in the Cook County Jail. Yikes, man. So as many of you are probably aware, he started yelling, "I'm not suicidal," over and over again, which made many of us believe that he was. Mm-hmm. And we did mention this briefly on the show. We mentioned it last time a little bit. My view, and I think this is what you're saying, we agree, he was actually suicidal. And by saying he wasn't, he was hoping that people would think it was a conspiracy. Because I got to be honest, his life's over. It's been over. He's a joke.
Well, that's what I said on air a couple days ago when we first talked about the story. Granted, it's just speculation. We have no idea what his motives are. But it sounded to me like it was at least possible that this is something a person who's planning on killing themselves would say if they were a complete egomaniac who wanted people to think that there was some kind of conspiracy behind it.
No, there's something sociopathic about this guy. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you have someone that's able to literally, like, cry on demand and go into great detail about the entire hoax, I think this is really tragic, this whole news story, right? Because it's setting an example. The whole point of punishing these people is to show society what happens when you do something like this. And so he gets out of jail now after 6 days. There's going to be a lot more hoaxes. And I think that might actually be deliberate on the left's part, right? Like, they don't want these hoaxes to go away.
There was a tweet from, I think it was Matt Walsh, and he had a bunch of tweets from, like, him and Andy Ngo. And he was basically saying that he couldn't, you know, in almost every circumstance, these hate crimes where someone spray paints something, they turn out to be hoaxes. Mm-hmm. And then he shows this story in four parts, you know, quote tweets from Andy Ngo, him, and some other person. And, you know, he says, "I can't recall a single moment," it may have been Andy Ngo said this, "in recent memory of one of these turning out to be real. Someone responded with, 'You should pay attention because this happened at Emory,' and then posts a link." And then Andy Ngo is like, "The guy who did that was a black, the guy who wrote the graffiti and the racial slurs was actually a black guy."
Yep.
So I got to be honest. Yeah. The only instance I can think of that was not a hoax was like some kids in New York used sidewalk chalk and made swastikas and that was it. And it was like some little kids. So there was no real like direct attack on a store or a person. I'm like, no, I think that one was like actually, maybe I'm wrong about that. But there was that story I remember that was a former NFL player had a pizza shop and like a chicken shop. And then they were doing really bad. So he just ransacked them and then spray painted racial slurs. And then, you know,
it happens. And the thing about these little kids, I remember in high school, my friends would prank me by drawing swastikas on my notebook. I'm not kidding. Like,
they
it was like,
prank you.
Yeah. And we had this whole thing of like,
edgy.
Oh, just turn it into windows. Right. So like,
right.
Little kids can't comprehend Nazism really. Like they don't understand the gravity of the Holocaust and how terrible it was. And so like they prank each other with that. And it's usually either a really terrible prank from someone that's super immature or a total hoax where someone's trying to get more attention or get away with fraud.
I think it's people just trying to get attention. There was, how many churches have been vandalized? I mean, you've probably seen these stories, right?
Yeah, of course.
They'll put racial slurs in the parking lot and then it was just like, it was someone from the church,
mm-hmm.
like staging a hoax.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's disgusting stuff. I'm sure a couple of years ago, you guys remember there was this story at Mizzou, and within one of the bathroom stalls, someone had drawn a swastika using fecal matter. And we were told that this was a neo-Nazi attack. Instead, first of all, extremely unbalanced, mentally ill person to draw anything with fecal matter. But somebody who's actually a Nazi is not going to depict their like sacred, cherished symbol with human crap.
Right.
But the conclusion, oh my goodness, this is a hate crime. It was very bizarre. Instead of like, wow, what a bizarre, disgusting thing to do, it was, this is white supremacy.
Yo, it's hard sometimes waking up and being like, oh, that's the news again.
Mm-hmm.
Because it keeps happening.
Yeah.
With these stories. And it's remarkable that, you know what really is just, it's kind of depressing. Jussie Smollett's being released. Hmm. You know, we thought we got him.
Hmm.
We
Remember?
Got him. He was arrested. He was caught. We knew it. He goes through trial. He is mocked and ridiculed. More evidence comes out. It seems like a clear cut slam dunk case. Finally convicted. Then we await sentencing and we're like, please just for once lock one of these people up. And they're like, okay. And let him out 6 days later.
Well, what are you taking out? What are you offering odds on that he gets another like another acting gig? Hollywood's going to take him back. I would take 1-to-1 odds on that.
Really?
Definitely.
Yeah. I wouldn't be shocked.
1-to-1 odds?
Yeah. Or I 1-to-1. I would take 1-to-1 odds that he gets some type of new TV deal or music. He'll come and repair his image. This is what they do. He'll have a whole apology tour, right? He'll come out and say he was sorry. He realized what he did and how bad it was. and then he starts making millions again.
It doesn't one-to-one mean that you'd put up money and win nothing if you were right?
No. I mean a dollar for a dollar, right? So I plus 100. So
is that what it is? That's 2-to-1, though, isn't it?
No. 2-to-1 is I put up a dollar, and if I win, you pay me $2.
Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Sure. Okay.
I think
you're right.
Sorry.
Yeah, maybe. I haven't been to the casino in long enough. It's been actually a couple weeks. Yeah. So you think so? I kind of thought his career was over. I mean, he's a laughing stock.
In a non-clown world, I think. Yeah. I think it's over, but exactly. We live in clown world.
That's true.
Well, I mean, and also, so I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with Brian Peck, but he was convicted, I believe, of raping a child, and he was brought back to work at Disney after he served his sentence. So, I'm sorry. So yeah, ABC/Disney hires convicted child molester Brian Peck to work on children's TV show. 1 year after he's released from prison. So the idea that they're above hiring Jesse Smollett is...
Yeah, that's true. And they gave, was it Roman Polanski?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and who's the other guy? Who's the other guy? What's his face?
The newer guy, right? Who was joking about pedophilia on Twitter.
Oh, no, yeah. No. The other guy with the glasses.
Oh, I can't remember.
What's his name?
I don't know.
He's a famous guy.
Famous guy with glasses?
I don't know.
I got nothing. Sorry.
Director, producer, whatever.
Steven Spielberg.
No.
That's what came up.
I don't know enough about movies and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yeah, like with Whoopi Goldberg, they brought her right back. And I'm still flabbergasted by the fact that Andrew Gillum is still a name in political circles after what happened with him. Absolutely insane.
Is he really?
He's still around. Yeah, he's rehabbing his image. He's repairing his marriage after that.
That's why I say, like, I wake up and I see the news and I'm just like, how about we go and talk about... Donut Factory instead, because it's just, I'm sick of, how do people believe this stuff at this point? How do we sit back and allow these kind of things to happen? And it's just kind of mind numbing.
Yeah, well, Ian mentioned this the other day, that I'd said to him, the way I define elite is as a person who's never going to face any consequences for their actions. And we see that in the case of Jesse Smollett. He was sentenced, but then he's let go after serving 6 days. So honestly, I guess those are more harsh consequences than a lot of other people we would consider elite would ever end up facing. But we shouldn't be surprised that he's let go, because what he did was try to forward the narrative that they're constantly trying to promote in the media.
Woody Allen.
Racist.
Oh, Woody Allen. Yeah.
Didn't he do something?
With his daughter or something. Yeah. There was something weird. Really screwed up with him.
Yeah.
People are mentioning James Gunn, too.
But
James Gunn was trying to be an edgelord and failing.
Mm-hmm.
He thought he was posting, obscene jokes about children would be funny, and people were like, bro, that's gross stuff. Don't do that. So it's different if you think you're being edgy. And it's not, and it's bad. Like, I'll be like, bro, that was bad. Don't do it again.
I think that's right.
But, like Roman and Woody and Jesse Smollett.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of like, yo, those people shouldn't be welcome back in this place.
Yeah.
That's cancel culture. Jesse Smollett should be canceled.
Exactly. Well, this is hilarious, because every single time anyone on the right points out that a person has done something terrible, the left goes, I thought you were against cancel culture, as if that's any kind of point against our argument that you shouldn't comb through someone's tweets from 12 years ago and then try to cancel them because they said men are men.
Right.
That race car driver's dad who said the Edward in the
80s. Yeah.
And so sponsors canceled him.
That's so insane.
Some things should be canceled, right? Like, there's a reason why we have laws in prison, and, like, some things should have a stigma to them.
Yeah, but I think the problem is it always comes back to this one issue where it's just, institutions and even conservatives take these people seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, why? Stop contracting with them. Stop working with them. Stop servicing them. Stop hiring them. Stop being hired by them. Just tell these unserious people to go away. Like, if there was a comic book store, like a game shop, and I see the big BLM fist, I keep walking.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I look up on Google and it's like, we sell Magic the Gathering cards and comic books. I'm like, I'm gonna go check it out. And I show up and they see a big sign in the window and I just turn right back around, get my car and leave.
Yep.
I'll order it online, dude. I'm not gonna give any service to these unserious psychotic cultists. I'm sorry. These people are the reason Jesse Smollett gets away with this.
Right.
These are the people who cheered for every single hoax every time.
They always fall for it. And it's not even falling for it.
Right.
No. It's part of the plan, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, no, continue, but I have a point I want to make about falling for it.
No, I just think it's part of their plan. They want division. They want chaos. They want us withdrawing from society and not participating, right? And, And I think that it's really important not to fall trapped to that, but also to figure out how to not support them and give them legitimacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's interesting because I think you're right that they don't fall for it, because to them it does not matter whether something is true or false. What matters is whether it maps onto their ideological worldview, because then in some subjective sense it's poetically true, so it's okay for them to promote it. And it forwards their goal, which is overall good and noble. The people who fall for it are the conservatives, who don't immediately say this sounds ridiculous and is probably BS, because we're afraid that there's some slight possibility that it's a true story, and we don't want to be labeled racist the one time it may have actually happened.
You know what I think? I agree with you. I don't know if Jussie Smollett is going to get work, right? So they're going to let him out of jail. Maybe his appeal just fails and he goes back to jail. They're saying it's only going to be 75 days, so, you know, 2.5 months with good behavior. I don't know if he gets rehired to act, but I would actually be willing to bet that he would get a reality TV show.
Oh, yeah.
Following the saga. I mean, people will watch it.
Or not, why not a CNN gig, right? MSNBC. I mean, yeah. That's how fundamentally unserious those networks are.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about CNN. I think it would be interesting to see them bring him on because he's friends with Don Lemon. Mm-hmm. But they, you know, CNN, as bad as they are, they don't want to, you know, punch holes purposefully in their ship as it sinks.
Well, here's the thing.
But hold on. Look, you know, what, A&E or AMC or whatever? What's the channel that has the weird...
A&E?
A&E.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to be like Jussie Smollett reality show, and it's going to be him sitting down and be like, I didn't do this. I got to call my lawyer, and they're going to follow him around. People would watch that because they hate him. Mm-hmm. So yep. That's his opportunity, and he's going to...
Write a book.
Yeah, I'm going to write a book. I did it.
Yeah, exactly. He's going to do If I Did It. He's going to have this whole OJ tour. He's going to go find the real hoaxer.
Yeah.
I think that you guys are underestimating how good of an actor Jussie is. He's just going to slip into He's going to slip into a new life somewhere, become a different person, and he's just going to blend in wherever he is because he's so talented that way. And then there's going to be some beloved celebrity 20 years from now who everyone worships, and he's going to go, it was I all along, Jussie, and I fooled you with my incredible acting skills.
Isn't it crazy, though? I mean, look at when he went on, was it ABC? Was it ABC did the interview?
Yeah, 60 Minutes or something.
60 Minutes, yeah. He manufactures perfectly these tears.
So, yeah.
This performance.
So well, that's what I'm saying.
He is one of the greatest actors.
Of all time.
Of all time, yeah.
That was the whole thing. He's just, the whole thing was a demo tape for him.
He comes out and he's like, I want to admit that I staged the whole thing, and the trial, that was the performance.
That was the performance.
I'll be in jail, I'll be out in 2 months, call my agent.
Very avant-garde piece of art.
Do you remember when Joaquin Phoenix did that thing?
No.
He like quit acting and then started rapping. And everyone was like, what is he doing? What's happening? And then it turned out that it was a big stunt.
Yep. I remember that.
That's probably just as Smollett's best bet. It was a big stunt.
I was just joshing, you guys. I was joshing around. All right. I wasn't serious.
He'd probably go to jail for a lot longer if he said that.
Can you imagine?
I mean, the funny
thing. I don't think so. No, yeah, I don't think he's ever going to see prison time.
No, I think actually if he admitted that he did it and it was a hoax and he did it for acting, he'd get less time. He would get less time in jail. Yeah. Because he's getting 150 days, even though he's refusing to admit what he did was wrong.
Yeah.
He's still denying it. So they're giving him that penalty. The idea is there's something called the trial tax. You go to trial, you get a harsher penalty because the idea is really that you're wasting the court's time, so they punish you. Mm-hmm. But the idea is supposed to be that you haven't learned your lesson, so you need more time in jail.
Well, and then to put it cynically, the other idea is if we make people feel more afraid to go to trial, then we can just sentence people for crimes without actually having to give them their day in court.
Yeah, so they'll pick him back up. Mm-hmm. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, at the very least, it's not something we would ever put past them.
Yeah. Isn't it depressing, though?
I guess. I mean, if you ever had any hope in Hollywood, I suppose.
Or the legal system.
Or the legal system, the bigger thing. That's fair.
Oh, man.
But it's also Chicago. I mean, I'm...
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm from Illinois, so it's... Mm.
Yeah.
It's tough.
As are we. It is interesting
Illinois
place.
Boys. Yeah.
Wouldn't it be just... It would just be so funny if it turns out that this really did happen and the cops staged all the evidence to, like... You know, just make him look bad.
It's like the worst white supremacist hate crime that's ever taken.
Turns out that the two white dudes who attacked Jussie were actually like off-duty cops.
Goes all the way up to Trump. Even higher. Goes all the way up to Putin.
And it actually is MAGA country, and we're making fun of this poor guy.
No one tells you this, but Cook County, very red. Very, very red.
Incredibly red.
Yeah.
Deep red.
Cook County?
Yeah.
It's just a city, right?
Extremely red. No, it's a little bit outside of the city. Yeah. Some of the suburbs are Cook County.
Well, Illinois itself is red. Yeah. Just you go in Chicago.
It's true. Well, who is it that said there are no red or no blue states, only blue cities?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
That's true, and there are red cities, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing about Chicago is that it's not even blue. It's zombie. Mm-hmm. You have, like, Illinois, growing up in Chicago, you have the zombie contingent and the Republican contingent. Mm-hmm. And Republicans, you know, they can vary from very ignorant to very knowledgeable. Mm-hmm. But the people in the cities who are voting Democrat are the zombie contingent, 99%. And that's what I grew up around. People who are just like, vote blue no matter who. And I'm like, who are you voting for? Don't care. As long as it's not a Republican. And I'm the city has been run by Democrats for 80 plus years and it's worse than ever.
No, it's doing really well.
Just worse than ever.
It's going great.
And it's funny too, because we used to have, do you guys know what Elotes is? It's like, so on the south side of Chicago, these guys pull up with carts full of corn.
And
They'll take the corn and they put mayonnaise, Parmesan, and cayenne pepper on it. And you eat
so
it.
So good.
Mm-mm. Or I would always have them, they cut the corn off into a cup and mix it with mayonnaise, Parmesan, and cayenne. And they had it to you. It was like $1. They got banned in our neighborhood.
Terrible.
But only, like, they couldn't cross Cicero on the south side. Because when you cross, so this is the fascinating thing about the Midway area. Mm-hmm. From, like, Harlem to Cicero, which is a few miles, from 47th to, like, 63rd, was a generally white Polish immigrant and, like, whiter area. When you crossed 47th to the north side, it was all black community, all black housing. When you crossed Cicero, it became all, like, Latino. So the city, for some reason, banned the Elotes guys from coming into our neighborhood, but they could still, like, they couldn't cross Cicero. Mm-hmm. And that was the weirdest thing to us, because we were like, so the guys who sell corn who are Hispanic can stay in the Hispanic neighborhood, but we like the corn. Mm-hmm. We love those guys. They took it away from us. It's almost like they wanted the segregation in that city.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And here's the funny thing is, like, there are certain things that, like, break down cultural divides, right? Like, it's food, it's music, it's, you know, movies, literature. And I do think there's something to that. Like, this whole, like, anti-cultural appropriation thing is really meant to keep us from participating in other cultures and being open to it and breaking down those barriers. Like, Cinco de Mayo is a great holiday because everyone likes tacos, and it's not, like, denigrating to, like, the Mexican community to celebrate Cinco de Mayo. Like, it's a good thing to participate. Catholics are really good about this, right? Like,
yes,
we take over and baptize all these, like, pagan holidays and make them ours. And it's beautiful.
That's colonization.
And we're not giving them back.
Oh, shit.
Ever.
You guys
not even Christmas
trees.
That's what we're told.
Not even Christmas.
Which I didn't know. I've had people tell me that. They're like, you know, when you worship Easter, you're worshiping a fertility god. It's like, I didn't know that. Wow. Interesting. I didn't know that. I guess, well, but I guess you know better than me what I'm doing.
Yeah, Easter,
so thank you.
You didn't realize that you didn't catch yourself when you were praying that you were actually saying fertility goddess.
I know. It's crazy.
It's like you were saying those words.
But yeah, no, it's true that there are a lot of things from other cultures that can be sanctified, and people from different cultures are able to relate to each other. And part of the problem is because racial tensions are so high and we have really stoked the flames of genuine hatred along ethnic lines, people are afraid not only to participate in other people's cultures, but to even engage in humor that might be targeted towards other groups, even in a more playful way. And I find it interesting because I think you see this happen sometimes. Every now and again, you'll meet that couple who make jokes about each other, but you can tell it's in, like, kind of a stabby sort of way. They're really being sort of crass and snide to each other, and it's very painful for everyone who's there. But then you have some couples who can kind of poke fun at each other, and it's really funny and everyone enjoys it. I think what happens is, as a relationship between two people or a group of people breaks down, humor goes from something which can be cherished and which is very endearing and helps bring them together, and it turns into something really insulting. And the same exact joke can be really funny coming from a person who you have a good relationship with, or really offensive coming from someone who you don't. And so I think breaking down racial relations, people ask why everything's so PC. I think a huge part of it is we just don't trust each other.
I was just thinking, you know, about the cultural appropriation stuff and the protests. Remember that video where the girl at prom or whatever, she wore the
Chinese dress?
Yeah. What is it called?
A kimono?
No, that's Japanese. Yeah. It was a Chinese thing. And, people in the chat will tell us what it was called, so I'm forgetting. And then people in China were like, that's cool. Like, they actually really liked it.
Yep.
And I was thinking about this. There's also the video where the guy's got dreads and the black girl, like, literally grabs him.
Uh-huh.
And she's like, you're stealing my culture. And he's like, yep, what are you talking about? And then I'm like, how come these people never protest Taco Bell?
Yeah.
Why don't they show up to Panda Express?
Well, also as if like there's one ethnic group that just owns dreadlocks.
Right.
That's not true, though. I mean, the Vikings had it.
Yeah, but, exactly. That's my point.
And you know, I know a bunch of people in Scandinavian countries who have dreadlocks because of, like, they had dreadlocks. But it's like, people have hair, dude.
Right.
People can do what they want to their hair.
No, can't
you don't do own hairstyles.
No, that's our due. Can't no, do but, hair. But come on. Like, intellectual property.
Yo, Taco Bell bears no resemblance to actual Mexican food.
No, that's exactly right.
Hard
exactly
shell right. tacos. Yeah. Burritos. Burritos aren't a Mexican thing. And cheddar cheese. What's going on here?
That nacho cheese is not cheese. It's terrible. It's powdered cheese.
Panda Express. Now, I'll tell you. Taco Bell is delicious. It's almost worth the bowel obstruction. Panda Express is also delicious. But, man, they're just chunks of sugary fried chicken. And it's,
yes.
But it's good. But I'm not going to pretend it's actually Chinese food. You know, Thai food in this country is a sugary, fatty, Americanized version. The same thing with, like, all of these different foods. And you know what? People love it.
Right.
Yeah.
So if these people want to go, cultural appropriation is wrong, stop ordering Pad Thai on Grubhub. I know you're doing it because it's like the number one food on Grubhub, or it's in the top five or whatever. Pizza, it's Italian. What gives you the right?
Mm-hmm.
No one's protesting these things.
You know what? You ever notice that no one ever starts an Irish food chain, like an Irish food.
There's an Irish food chain.
terrible!
But that's not like a large national thing, you know? You don't have it in every, you don't have a bunch of them in every single
it's
city or state.
We have Scottish.
We wish some people would appropriate that part of, honestly, no, I'm glad that
we have. Why don't you make O'Donnell's?
No, I
won't. O'Donnell's.
Oh my gosh, that's the thing. Like, McDonald's, it's an Irish name. And you go in there, it's
no,
like, this
Scottish.
Is not Irish food. No, it's MC. It's when it's MAC, it's Scottish.
When I went to the UK, they told me it was Scottish.
What did those Brits say to you?
Yeah.
They were going to tell you more colonizer lies about Ireland? Them, bro? Are you serious right now? Learn your history.
Look it up. I think you're wrong.
Maybe. I hope not. Because if we lose McDonald's, we have nothing left.
In the United States, I often have like a stupid dad joke where I tell people and they're like, what do you want to get? And I'll be like, do you guys want to get Irish food? And they'll be like, oh yeah. And I'll be like, it's a good place to make McDonald's.
That's
and
good.
Everyone laughs. I did that in the UK and they all looked at me and they were like, that's Scottish.
Oh,
and I was like, no, it's MC. And they were like, O is Irish. MC is Scottish. And I was like, is it?
That's not true. No, MC is Irish. McNamara is my mother's maiden name, and they're all from Ireland.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
MCs. Those Brits lied to you. Those Brits lied to you.
Of course they did.
All right, well, let's talk about the next lie.
Oh, boy.
We had the story from the New York Post. Boston social justice activist and husband scammed at least $185,000 from donors, so saith the feds. They're being hit with, I think it's 18 different federal charges. They say a high-profile social justice activist in Boston and her husband used a nonprofit they founded to scam at least $185,000 from donors who included a Black Lives Matter chapter and the local DA's office, federal authorities allege. Monica Cannon Grant and Clark Grant allegedly treated their Violence in Boston organization as a personal piggy bank to pay for rent, shopping sprees, delivery meals, visits to a nail salon, summer vacation trip to Maryland. I heard that they were going to Bubblegum Shrimp. That was one of the things that was heavily reported.
Bucks.
They're going to mention, the following year, she was named Best Social Justice Advocate by Boston Magazine and one of the Boston Globe's Bostonians of the Year. When will people stop falling for this stuff? Should we run through the list again? The Trayvon Martin story.
Mm-hmm.
What was the initial report? That a white guy saw a black kid and then attacked him and killed him, shot him. What really happened? Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman got into a fight.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe Zimmerman was in the wrong for confronting him. He was a neighborhood watch and Trayvon Martin was walking behind houses. Trayvon Martin had him in a ground pound position where he was on top of him and pummeling him. And then George Zimmerman shot him in the chest and killed him. Zimmerman's Hispanic. We also have Michael Brown. Hands up, don't shoot. That was a lie.
That was total lie.
Total lie.
Also, remember with the Trayvon case, NBC actually deceptively edited the phone call in order to make it sound like Zimmerman was describing Trayvon Martin as being up to no good because he was quote-unquote black. They asked him, what does he look like? He says he looks like he's up to no good. He's wearing a black hoodie, something along those lines. And they cut it together to say, he looks like he's up to no good, black.
The other thing is, the whole thing was a sham with Trayvon Martin. The picture that you saw everywhere was him when he was like 11 or 12.
Right.
And he was much, much older and much, much bigger. They made out like George Zimmerman beat up like a 12-year-old little punk kid. And he was much older than that.
Jussie Smollett, lie.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Ahmed Arbery's story, he was just jogging. That was a lie. It's just every single day there's a new lie, and these people, they're Rittenhouse.
Yeah, the whole thing, the entire thing was that, oh, he crossed state lines and he shouldn't have that gun. As soon as I saw the story, it was very obvious to me, and I think everyone who saw it, that this was a case of self-defense. But then they started muddying the waters by saying he had broken gun laws or crossed state lines and maybe he was looking for trouble. But not only could none of that be substantiated, I'm pretty sure they just made all of it up because it was so obvious that this kid was defending himself. And then what ends up happening is people go, well, because they've muddied the waters, now we have to wait for more answers before we can really be sure and take a side, and the story loses momentum.
At a certain point, I just, you know, every few months I say something where I'm just like, it's all the same thing every day.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. We wake up, we have a new story. Cause I've been, you know, talking about these stories and criticizing the hoaxes going on 7 or so years now. A little bit longer, but doing the actual YouTube stuff and the podcast stuff. And at a certain point, I'm kind of just like, what's the point of saying it if it doesn't change anything?
No. I think that's the wrong mentality. I wouldn't lose hope. There are a lot of people. You're seeing the complete decentralization of how people get their information. I was going through like a lot of your episodes before coming on, and it's absolutely beautiful. 450,000 people. I mean, for the last few episodes, watch your show.
Yeah.
That is beautiful. And
plus clips and live viewership isn't counted in that number.
So exactly. And the thing is, what you're doing is exactly right. You are giving so many people the information that they need, and you don't need to get 100% of the people. You don't even need 50%. You need a solid 10 to 25% of Americans that are getting solid information, because those are the people that are going to go talk to their family and friends and make sure that they know the information. There's like 10 to 25% of Americans are just helpless. They're zombies. Then like there's this 50% in the middle that are actually persuadable. And then there's like us, right? Like that are on the front lines, activist types. I think you're actually doing the Lord's work here, and I wouldn't lose hope. I think there's a lot to be
optimistic about. Maybe that's it. Maybe, you know, what needs to happen is we're growing. We're building infrastructure. We're expanding. We're doing new shows. We're getting a new headquarters. And then I guess what really happens is in 10 or 15 years, these cable networks won't exist anymore.
Exactly.
You know what's crazy? And this is no dig. I'm a big fan of It's Always Sunny. But I heard that It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia had a new season out. How many you guys have heard of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia,
Of course,
right?
Yeah.
It's now the longest running live action comedy series, I guess. So how many viewers do you think this show got at, on their seventh season on average? How many people watched one episode?
At the premiere? Yeah, I'm not sure.
No, not the premiere. Just like throughout the season on average. How many people do you think watched an episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia?
I'm going to pretend I'm not Googling it.
Just tell me what you think.
500,000.
Duck, duck, go.
So it was about, I think the premiere episode of season 7 was like 2 million.
Wow.
And then they would get like 1.3 to 1.5 million per episode. How many people do you think watch now?
50,000.
300. 200 to 300,000 per episode. I'm not digging on them. I'm a fan. I think It's Always Sunny is funny. I don't really watch it for the most part. Mm-hmm. I think what happens is, you know, we've launched a couple other shows. We have The Vlog. We have Chicken City. We have Pop Culture Crisis. And I'm wondering if there's just cultural swings in terms of what people are interested in. And sitcoms have just, you know, there's too many options.
Mm-hmm.
So people are watching a bunch of different shows. And also, you know, back when this show was at its peak, we didn't have this plethora of content and we didn't have this plethora of streaming services.
Mm-hmm.
So what's happening is it's not so much that people don't like the show. It's that over time, people start using technology and they start absorbing information in different ways. So the reason I bring this up is that I think it's entirely possible and likely that within 10 or 15 years, CNN just has nothing and they're gone. And then it doesn't matter that people believe them because there's nothing to believe anymore. They don't exist.
Right.
However, 10 years after that, this show will be outdated with limited viewership and people will be in the metaverse or who knows where.
It's all going to be Shimcast, baby.
All Shimcast.
That's all anyone's going to watch.
You plug your brain right into the Neuralink and then Shim speaks directly into your mind.
Right. I think what's going to end up happening too, unfortunately, and people are going to have to be vigilant about this, is, as you have mentioned, it's very easy to covertly fund people online, so I think there are going to be a lot of people who want to promote the establishment narrative who are going to be very well funded by people from within the establishment who traditionally would have just given their money to CNN or placed advertisements on their network.
You see it. You know, you see it on YouTube, the favorite channels. They're trying to prop up CNN, you know, so much mm-hmm. to perpetuate all these lies. Are you guys familiar with Defiant L's?
Yes.
I think it was Defiant Owls who had this. It was what they do is they show a tweet from someone and then they show a follow up, which is like failure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was like Brian Stelter talking about you know, we can't just trust the cops on this Jussie Smollett thing. You know, we got to hear it out. And the next one is like Jussie Smollett sentenced to 100 days in jail for hate crime hoax. And it's just like, yeah, you know, you shouldn't be listening to people who are. I'll tell you this. I can give him credit for being a bit skeptical for mm-hmm. sure. But it's like at some point you kind of just say like, we know. Or we should err on the side of that was BS.
Yeah. Well, the skepticism only ever runs in one direction. Mm. Every single time we hear an accusation of racial hatred, we're told if we don't buy into it hook, line, and sinker, it's because we actually just hate black people and not that we want more evidence before we jump to a conclusion.
Yeah.
But black when it runs matter. In the other direction, when it's a BLM activist or Jussie Smollett hoaxing or doing something illegal or corrupt, well, then we need to stop and wait for the evidence and make sure that we have all the facts straight before we comment.
I can think of one time there was a mass campaign with racist vandalism. It was carried out by a bunch of young white men. Mm. It was when those white supremacists put up those flyers everywhere saying it's okay to be white.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which it is not. It is not.
Apparently. It is not. Disavow.
Apparently, that's the message they're sending. Mm-hmm. It was brilliant trolling, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, exactly. For those unfamiliar, I think most people know this. It was a white sheet of paper and it just said, it's okay to be white. And people would put the sticker on a pole and they'd be like, you're a white supremacist. And they're like, that's crazy. Yeah.
This is an interesting discussion I had with some of my friends. And I just want to ask you guys, do you identify as white?
Me? No. I don't.
But
everybody knows
Catholic,
I'm more Catholic than anything. Yeah.
But actually, everybody knows the meme that I have second generation mixed race family. So mm-hmm. we don't have that. That's like, I guess there are people that are, but the idea is, it's interesting. The left says, see, the reason you don't is because you live in a world full of white people. Mm-hmm. So your default.
Yeah.
Why would you identify with what everyone else is?
But this is the problem with that analysis. Firstly, it's entirely uncritical. It's not actually looking at specific ethnic backgrounds. So Irish people and other ethnicities, mm-hmm. which were generally more Catholic, as a matter of fact, such as the Irish, the Italians, the Polish, were not considered white, even though we had white skin. Mm-hmm. So I see whiteness, quote unquote, as an identity which has often been used to exclude Catholics.
Well, that's
not something I identify with.
That's partially what the left critical race theorists argue, mm-hmm. that whiteness is a political term and always has been because there were white people who weren't white. And they actually argue now Eastern Europeans aren't white. Like Luke Rutkowski, blonde hair, blue eyes, they say is a person of color.
Is not white. Well, here's the issue. In the United States, we have a very unique racial history as a result of slavery. Black people, unfortunately, lost a lot of their ethnic identity because they were brought over here forcibly and were not able to retain the information on what part of Africa they came from specifically. And I think that's become rejected onto people who we call white now, even though they would have considered themselves Irish, Polish, Italian, Dutch when they came over here. They're thrown into an analogous category of white, even though they're more or less identifying or had identified until much more recently with their ethnic identity rather than their racial identity.
Yeah. This is exactly this is one of the arguments from the left that the reason why, you know, there's no issue with black pride or power is because they don't have an ethnic identity. They have a racial identity because of what you just described.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whereas for a white person, you could say you're proud of being Irish or Scottish or Ukrainian, but not white.
Yeah. But there's this kind of Montanbali fallacy, which they engage in where they will try to say things like we're only against white privilege in a system that places you on a pedestal simply because of your skin color. We're not actually talking about your skin color specifically, but then how do they identify you? Well, by your skin color, and they'll go after you and say you're bad because you're white. So even though I don't identify as white.
You want to talk about white privilege, Jussie Smollett.
Huh. Yeah.
If whiteness is political, then a millionaire celebrity who is propped up by the media and defended when he commits a hoax and then still has activists getting his back. Now that's some kind of privilege. Mm-hmm. And at what point, if whiteness is political, at what point would black people become politically white? It's like, no, it's a serious question.
No, it's a good question. Well, I mean, they will call black conservative activists white supremacists.
Right.
I mean, literally white just means bad and black means good. That's how they use these terms.
Yeah, no, and then you have the other thing where, like, they're redefining all of these terms. Like, the ADL came out and defined racism, right, as the support of systemic racism. Like, they use the same words to define it, which is always a really bad sign.
Yes.
But basically, the only way you can be anti-racist or against racism is to support Marxism.
Like, 100%.
That's part of the plan.
The ADL changed the definition of racism to be about something like racial dominance or something like that, and then had to change it again like a week later and apologize because something happened in like a Jewish community and they were like, oh, maybe we should have thought about what we were claiming because people started saying you couldn't be racist against Jewish people or something like that. And then all of a sudden the ADL was like, we better revert our definition.
They should talk to Whoopi Goldberg.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, she knows all. Well, apparently they used to arrest people like Tucker Carlson and Tulsi Gabbard for... you know, pushing propaganda, which is not true.
That whole Whoopi Goldberg scandal got just memory holed. Uh-huh. Like, it's like it never even happened.
Oh, yeah. Right.
That's what it was, right?
The ADL, that's what happened. Yeah.
For anyone
she
else,
came out, that was amazing. She said, that wasn't racist, that was just white people, you know, when white people. And then the ADL realized, like, this whiteness definition of racism is really backfiring on, you know, like the Jewish community.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Maybe they shouldn't have tried playing the woke game and then they realized they had to change it back.
By the way, I saw a hysterical tweet. Someone called them the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League.
Oh, yeah. That was fantastic. That's good.
Thought that was fantastic.
Very clever.
Yeah.
Very clever.
But I'll also say, too, it's always funny when people will define racism as systemic racism specifically because, A, I mean, you lose the ability to analyze racism at the level of individual behavior rather than just looking at it systemically. But on top of that, you mentioned using definitions or using the actual word you're defining within the definition. This is the first thing you are taught in any etymology class. If you want to define a word, you cannot use that word in the definition.
Exactly.
So I don't know if I mentioned this on the show about the black card revoked. We talked about that, right?
Maybe.
The black card revoked. We went to I think we were in Altoona, Pennsylvania. Was it Altoona? Maybe not. Yeah, I think it was. I don't know. Anyway, we're at an Airbnb and they had a bunch of board games. They had a pack of cards and it was called Black Card Revoked.
Huh.
Yeah, we talked about this with Gothics.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
that's right.
It was a card game that was supposed to be, you know, if it was for black people to play and it was about black culture and it asked questions like what movie does every black person have in their collection? And I thought it was racist and I'm like, man, but far be it for me. And it was made and marketed by, you know, black people for black people, so there you go, I guess. I don't know if it's racist or not if these things are held by, you know, to be true by them. But one of the questions was if quote unquote, they give reparations, what should they give? And I was like, why is they in quotes?
They
in quotes is a reference to Jewish people.
Right.
Because when you're referring to authorities of any power, you just say they or them.
Mm-hmm.
When it's put in quotes, it's a specific reference to Jewish people. Hmm. And so I saw that and I was like, that's kind of weird. And look, I don't know. I think maybe the people who made this game are anti-Semites, and it's possible because they have ties to, you know, high-profile politicians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're looking at that story. Maybe there's something there. I don't know. But we know that there's a lot of prominent Black Lives Matter activists that are deeply anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
We saw this with the Women's March. These individuals were forced to resign because they were pushing insane conspiracy theories about the Jewish people.
Yeah, well, look, if you tell people that any time a group of people is successful, it's because they're stealing something from you, they're going to look at every successful group of people and say they're stealing something from us. I don't know why anyone thought that that would start and end with white people.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I can't stand the just like the general anti-Semitic, like, so anti-Semitism in general is annoying to me because it's the same CRT argument. Privileged group of people dominate. I'm like, get out of here, dude. Like, there are CEOs of big companies and in media who are not of a particular ethnic background. It can be anybody who works hard and succeeds. It's weird that people are like, I notice there's a whole lot of one group of people in this industry that proves it. And I'm like, dude, that's a privilege argument. That's a ridiculous argument. I'm not playing that game.
Well, and if you know, like, I have friends who are Orthodox Jews, and the reason that they have influence and they are successful is because they have such a strong community. Like, their
family.
It's family. Yep. It's their friends. Like, they are so tight knit. Like, they help pay for each other's kids, like, tuition at school. I wish that, like, Catholics had a community similar to that.
Yeah.
Cause it's so strong and it's admirable, really.
I was getting there, honestly, though. I'm seeing it
in a lot of
places with Catholics.
Yeah. The annoying thing to me about the anti-Semitism, be it from BLM or from, like, white supremacist groups or whatever, it's like, right now in New York, we've had this ongoing problem where Hasidic Jews are being chased down and brutally beaten. And I'm just like, where is the great power structure to intervene and tell the police to actually deal with this hate that's happening on the streets? But they don't. Why? Because the people who run New York also are deeply anti-Semitic.
Right, right.
So, I mean, it's like, for, you know, for the, it's not Bill de Blasio anymore, but that dude is a far leftist who probably held all of these same insane beliefs. And so this idea that one group has privilege over the others, yeah, sometimes some groups do, but I think the real issue is merit. Mm-hmm. Merit, drive, and a little bit of luck sprinkled on top. Mm-hmm. Chance favors the prepared. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, if you are smart and you work really, really hard, you'll become successful. But ultimately, we've talked about this before when it comes to, you know, why you see a high propensity of successful Jewish individuals. Could it be family? Mm-hmm. We know that family is a key indicator of success, mm-hmm. regardless of your religious background. As Isn't you were it, saying with the Catholics and...
Well, it, no, but family is everything, right? Like, Lydia and I were talking about this before the show. Family is why you get a job. Family is why you go to work. Family is why you love your country and why you go to war and you're willing to die in it so that your kids and your grandkids can have a good life. Like, family drives everything. And, like, it's like the social science on this is so boring because it's so predictable, right? Like, kids raised in a loving household with parents that take them to church on Sunday are always the best performing group. They commit less crime. They don't commit suicide. They don't get addicted to drugs. It's all very boring and it's all basic. And, you know, the Jewish community is like really figure that out.
Are you familiar with the, blue zones?
No.
It's where the, there's like seven areas of the planet where people have a life expectancy that exceeds 100 or why there's like the highest propensity towards having people live over 100. And so some researchers went to these areas to figure out what do they have in common that may contribute to people living to be over 100. And there's some interesting things, like they eat only till they're about 85% full. Mm-hmm. They don't overeat. But one of the most interesting things is they all have a job. So they talk to this one, he's a Japanese guy, and he's like 102, and he's chopping wood. Mm-hmm. And they're like, why are you doing this? Shouldn't you be relaxing and be retired? And he's like, well, if I don't do it, who will? Uh-huh. Someone's got to get the wood. And it was for his community and for his family. Community and family was another big part of it. Yep. They're very close-knit and tight-knit families and communities. And the reason he had to chop the wood was because he needed to make sure everybody had this available. And if he didn't, no one else would.
Yep.
I was also reading that the highest, the biggest spike in when deaths occur is right after retirement.
Mm, yeah.
So I think people need to understand how important purpose is mm-hmm. in a human's life. Without purpose, people become dejected, depressed, and violent, like we see with so many young people these days. And with purpose, we see a lot of people living to be over 100 years old.
Yep, that's right. And actually, there's a lot of studies that have come out over the last few decades that show the benefits of not just like having children, like for your mental health, like down the road, but like super old people when they're around their grandkids a lot. Their cognitive ability, like they can like reverse parts of dementia and erosion in the brain. It's really cool stuff. And it's, I think you're right. It's about duty. It's about responsibility. It's about purpose. Cause when you lose that, like so many people, when they retire, my great grandmother lived to be 95 and she didn't really start to fall apart until she got out of her daily routine. She used to go to the library. She went to two Goodwill stores, a thrift store and the Goodwill. She went to all the grocery stores, clipped the coupons. As soon as she stopped doing that, she just kind of fell apart.
Think about it from an evolutionary perspective. You've got a finite amount of energy in a certain area and resources for a life form, be it human or otherwise. And so what happens if there is a group of people or a group of animals and several of them stop producing for the rest of their herd? It's a strain on the herd. Mm-hmm. And so then what happens is the old, you know, it stands to reason that life evolves duty and purpose. Yep. Because those who have a sense of duty and purpose to each other are more likely to survive, more likely to have kids, and thus those traits are carried on into the future with us. Thus, family and community are extremely important. The other interesting thing, too, is I think purpose. You have to have a reason to do things, to be alive. Otherwise, we're facing the Rat Utopia experiment, in my opinion. Are you familiar? We've mentioned it several times and recently. This is where they put a bunch of rats in a, you know, unlimited food, unlimited water, but finite space. What happens when you don't have to fight for food? What happens when you don't have to do any work?
You're lazy.
It's not just that. They found what they called behavioral sink. Behavior started to break down. cannibalism emerged. Mm. Some rats would just groom themselves incessantly and never do anything.
Wow.
They would engage in strange behaviors. And if they took one of the rats out of the utopia and put it in with a regular population, its ideas would persist and spread. So without purpose and without struggle, humans become, likely, in my opinion, will become broken, you know, and unhealthy.
Yeah.
Things fall apart.
And I would say, I mean, even beyond the sort of more materialistic Darwinian analysis, we can just say that human beings have deep spiritual needs. There's something about us that's very mysterious and difficult to understand. And when we're not contributing to something that we understand is greater than ourselves, we do start to fall apart.
Yeah, absolutely. You need that drive. We've looked into this actually a lot on the economic side of things. And the funny thing is like, you would think that, you know, having kids and getting married would like, you know, put you further back in terms of how much money you're making. It's actually not true. And there's this weird thing. A lot of experts think that, when you have children, it's actually a bigger motivator to get a better job, invest more in your business so you can provide better. But it's overall, like when you have to struggle, you have to cut the fat, right? Yeah. You have to become more efficient. And it just keeps you on your toes. Like, and family, I think, helps drive that. Community helps drive that.
For a lot of people, they have no purpose. And I think if you look at the millennial generation, I wonder what it could be. Well, there's two things: no religion, no kids.
Yep.
Yeah.
So then what do they live for? For people who a long time ago, I'm not saying this to say that people should be religious, but certainly without religion, we can see people become listless. We used to have, you know, people had faith. They had community.
Mm-hmm.
So religion served several purposes. You would go to church, and that meant you were with your community. You were communicating with each other. You were sort of synchronizing a lot of ways. It was a chance for the people who lived next to each other to talk about what was affecting them. So that was important.
Yep.
We don't have that anymore. Mm-hmm. People don't even talk to their neighbors anymore.
It's so really weird.
It is.
When I was growing up, like, I was always with my neighbors. Like, and they all went to different churches, right? I mean, some of my friends went to the same church as me, but like, we had a neighborhood gang. We would literally ride our bikes around. We built forts, like, and we knew all the other neighbors, even if they didn't have kids, and they would talk to us and, you know, hang
parties.
Out. Yeah.
Block parties, barbecues.
Yeah. And that doesn't happen anymore.
Especially in New York, man. You go to New York and you live on top of somebody and you never met them. That's the weirdest thing to me.
Yeah.
Every apartment I've ever had, you know, I'm in New York City. I was living off of, Myrtle and Nostrand. And there are people my age behind me, below me, and above me. And it's like, why don't I know who they are?
No,
like, we
I
could
know
probably
exactly
play
what
Xbox
mean.
Yeah. Together yeah. and order pizza if I just talked to the guy. Never did.
Yeah.
Just never happens.
Yeah, in a very strange way, the internet has actually alienated us from our own actual location. There's been something wonderful about the fact that it's given us access to people who are nowhere near us. But you stop forming social connections with the people who are right next to you.
Yeah. No, that's
Let's
right.
talk about some more media lies and family and all that stuff. We got the story from Politico.
Oh, boy.
Americans split over Florida's controversial bills on gender identity and race.
So controversial.
Let me just slow down here and correct the article before we even get into it. They're, of course, referring to the Parental Rights and Education Bill, which the Democrats call Don't Say Gay, which is a lie.
It's weird.
It is controversial, fine, I guess, but it is not a bill on gender identity and race. Mm-hmm. That seems strange to me. Mm-hmm. The bulk of the bill in Florida, as we often clarify, is parents have a right to know what's happening.
Yep.
That and no sex ed for preschoolers to third grade.
5, 6, 7, 8 years old.
That's it. Mm-hmm. Teachers are still allowed to talk to kids and say the word gay to their faces. A teacher can still go up to a child and say, you should be gay. That is not being banned in any way. Makes you wonder about what Republicans are actually doing.
I mean, bill doesn't even nearly go far enough.
So here we go. I love this. Politico says, the poll asked respondents about Florida's parental rights and education, dubbed the Don't Say Gay bill by opponents. Now, here's the funny thing. In their actual poll, the question refers to it as don't say gay.
Mm. Yep.
And I'm like, that is not proper polling.
Dishonest.
But you're still seeing the majority say they agree with it.
I really don't like how they're framing it as Americans being sharply divided on this issue. I mean, there's a 16-point gap there. And you got this is an issue where 33% of Democrats support what DeSantis did.
Yeah.
That's not sharply divided. I'm sorry. Like, when you're over 50% and your opponents are at 35, imagine if Donald Trump had beaten Joe Biden by, you know, 51% to 35%. That's a landslide, right? Like, so it's just the whole thing is skewed. The questions are skewed. But they had to at least admit it that they're not.
One of the crazy things is that 69% of Americans support the banning of Sputnik and RT, it appears. I mean, that's kind of crazy to me. You should just watch that stuff knowing it's probably bunk, but see what they're telling people for sure. But I'm gonna see if I can find the exact question here, because it's funny. The political poll question is not just instead of saying, do you support the parental rights and education bill out of Florida? They say this. As you may know, the Florida legislature has passed a bill labeled by opponents as the Don't Say Gay bill, limiting the teaching of sexual orientation and gender identity to Florida school students. Some say that limiting these discussions will protect children from inappropriate classroom topics, while others say it will block important conversations about LGBTQ issues. To what extent do you support or oppose the following items in the bill? Banning the teaching of sexual orientation and gender identity from kindergarten through third grade. Strong support is 37%. Somewhat support is 13%. And then somewhat opposes 11, strongly opposed 23.
Weirdo.
Clearly see the majority there is in favor of, in support of it. They then go on to ask basically the same question and then say, limiting lessons on orientation and identity after third grade to age appropriate discussions. And you still have the majority, 32% in support of, 20% somewhat supporting. So you still have the majority there being like, yeah, it should be age appropriate. My question is, what would the percentage have been if they didn't frame this in favor of lies from the Democrats and the left?
They tell you what the opponents of the bill call it, but not the actual name in the question. How much more bias can you get with it?
And they push the lie from the Democrats instead of telling you what the bill actually does. Mm-hmm. They say opponents say it will block important conversations about LGBTQ issues. That's irrelevant. What if they said this? Let me read you the question reframed. As you may know, the Florida legislature has passed a bill labeled by opponents as the Don't Say Straight bill, limiting the teaching of orientation and identity to Florida school students. Some say that limiting these discussions will protect children from inappropriate classroom topics, while others say it will block important conversations about traditional marriage issues. To what extent do you support or oppose the following items in the bill? There's no difference in the bill. Mm-hmm. I could literally call it Don't Say Straight and say Republicans have just banned teaching children about traditional marriage. Yep. It's true. Literally true. But see, Politico comes out and they poll people. Now, here's why I bring this up. Even though they falsely framed the story based on lies, the majority still agree with it.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's weird. There's like a super majority of Americans, and I know this is pretty radical, like that the vast majority of Americans, they don't want to sexualize kids. Like, they want to let them be kids, you know? Like, why do we have to make everything sexual? Someone tweeted at me today. They said, not everything has to be gay. Mm. And I think that's right. Like, great. You do you. Live your life. Fine. But not everything has to be about you.
I remember back, there was a cartoon made by this guy. He was on Reddit. I can't remember his name. He deleted it. It was about atheism on Reddit. When it first started, one of the default subreddits getting a ton of attention was r/atheism. Mm-hmm. That meant if you were a random regular person who went to Reddit, you would see posts from people about being atheist. So he made this cartoon where he basically mocked the idea because Reddit propped up a community that was just ragging on people for what they believed. And it's like, why is that a thing? Why is that the default position? Why, you know...
Mm-hmm.
I kind of forgot where I was going with that. But ultimately what ends up happening is the dude deleted the cartoon and you can't find it anywhere anymore. I mean, maybe it's been archived somewhere, but I thought it was a great point because the cartoon ends by saying like, why is this a default subreddit to just, you know,
be on everyone's feed?
Yeah. Like why just, you know, be mean to people all the time? Why just prop that up? I lost my train of thought with my point, so you guys just start talking.
Well, the big thing here is, like, this stuff really is happening across the country. Like, we did this video last week showing, like, saying thank you to Governor DeSantis for protecting our kids from women like this in our kids' public schools. And it's this woman who started this sexy summer camp, and she's talking about how she's like, I encourage every kids of all ages to, you know, basically abuse themselves.
Ugh.
And she starts talking about how her nephews who started abusing themselves when they were toddlers, like going into this. And it's like, guys, this is happening. Like there's a coordinated effort to sexualize your kids and like break them. And so thank God, you know,
I remember my point now. Basically, I brought that up because what the community was doing was it was making a whole bunch of people who didn't know a whole lot about religion just blindly be part of this hate mob against Christianity, but nothing else. And so when you look at what's happening after the don't say gay or whatever, there's like a TikTok video where a guy is like wearing a shirt with pride flags on it. And it's like, why do that? Mm-hmm. What do you think is happening? They don't look at the news. They don't read the bill. They have no idea. So it's not just about the atheism community on Reddit or anything like that. It's about the fact that there is some truth to out of sight, out of mind is literally true. If you can control what people see from the bulk of their social media, you are controlling what they will complain about. So mm-hmm. What do we get on Twitter? People are talking about COVID, and then one day, like a switch was flicked, it's Ukraine.
Yep.
Because they want to make sure the only thing you see is these stories and this information. This is why the Democrats called it Don't Say Gay. Mm. They want to make the argument, and then even Ben Shapiro walks into that trap. Ben Shapiro tweeted to Ted Lieu, this bill stops you from indoctrinating kids with your weird gender ideology or whatever, something that affects. And I'm like, no, it doesn't. It literally does not do that. The Democrats made up a lie. They claimed, here's the framing of the bill. Conservatives walked into it and said, well, actually, that framing of the bill is a good thing. And it's like, both of you are talking about something totally irrelevant to what's going on. But this is the game. Media will often frame things. I'll put it this way as well. I'll say this. Politico doing a poll where they give you a paragraph breaking down an issue is a total violation of polling ethics, in my opinion. They should say this. How do you feel about the parental rights and education bill out of Florida? Strongly support, somewhat support, somewhat oppose, don't know, or no opinion. And guess what would happen? Don't know would be 80%.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
And hey, that would be funny, wouldn't it?
Yep.
Instead, the funny thing is they still try and frame it in favor of the left's argument, and the majority of people actually still support the bill.
Yep. It's got to be depressing for them. Because they have think about all the levers of cultural influence that the left has here, right? Like they've got the mainstream media, they've got Hollywood, they've got the music industry, corporate America, big tech, like everything. Like they control so many sources of information, and they still can't win on something like this.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think maybe their power is faltering.
Mm-hmm.
You know, less and less people are interested in the lies. The lies have become more and more obvious. I think of it like they say that wealth lasts three generations. Someone works really, really hard and builds a big business, becomes a billionaire.
Right.
Their son or daughter inherits it and then takes the company over and maintains it. They have kids. No, so what happens is, you know, the child of the entrepreneur was still taught the values of hard work, but not, you know, was not someone who founded a company and could maintain that. Then they have kids who are taught to a certain degree the value of hard work, but certainly not how to start a company or even to maintain it. So by the third generation, you see wealth start to fizzle out.
Well,
I think of it similarly in terms to how the Democrats have institutional control and how the media is playing. It seems like, you know, two generations ago, media was strongly controlled by savvy marketers who were like keen on manipulating. Then their kids inherit it and they're like, keep the system up, keep it rolling, you know, CNN or whatever. Now we're on the third generation who are just like, I have no idea what's going on. And so they try doing the most outrageous and garbage propaganda that doesn't work, and we're waking up to it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because one theme that has repeatedly come up as we've discussed the quote-unquote don't say gay bill is that if you're going to refer to it as an anti-grooming bill, it does, which would be great, it doesn't go nearly far enough. And the left hears that young children below a certain age are not going to be discussing sexuality in the classroom when it would be wildly inappropriate. And they go, oh my goodness, but what about gay people? How are we going to protect them? Instead of saying, look, this is a bill that is specifically set up to protect children from inappropriate discussions and also to ensure that parents are notified by certain things that the school district might otherwise try to keep from them, even though they have a right to know as parents. And all the left can think about is, what about protecting the poor, sweet gays? That's literally it.
And that's why I think it's better to call it the Don't Say Straight Bill. And I am outraged. These Republicans are banning discussions on traditional marriage.
Yes,
I agree with the Democrats. We should come together and say we should be allowed to teach kids about traditional marriage.
We should. That should actually be the standard, right? Like, I mean, this is the truth. This is what you should be shooting for.
I still have no problem with being like, we're not going to talk to preschoolers or third graders about, you know,
about sexuality. Well, this is the bizarre thing, right? Imagine thinking you're going to get public opinion on your side trying to fight a bill that says you can't talk to children below a certain age about sexuality with, but then gay people won't be able to tell children about their sexuality when they're in preschool. Who, like, what world do they live in that they think the average person is going to hear that and go, oh no, oh my goodness.
Seamus, according to this poll, at least, we have around 34% of people who don't like that. So you've got a third.
It's true.
If we were to extrapolate the data, who are hearing this from Politico, probably for the first time, and saying, four-year-olds should be taught these things.
You know, I thank goodness that I don't know anyone who would be in support of that, virtually. Yeah. I mean, maybe I do know some people who are lefties, so I made friends with when I was younger, who, if I asked them about this and reconnected, might say they supported it, but...
They're zombies.
I mean, yeah, exactly. Those are people I really want conversations with. That's disgusting.
I have a lot of friends from back during Occupy. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of, you know, that I talk to, and they don't know what's in the bill.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
This is dangerous. You know, how do you defeat, we have political zombification in this country. We have a horde, tens of millions of political zombies, and they are tearing away at our system.
No. That's right. But here's where Donald Trump was a huge benefit to the movement, is that he showed us basically how to fight back, and that you could actually call out the BS and the lies and end up winning these political battles. And now you're seeing that being transferred to DeSantis. And DeSantis is calling it out. That press conference he had was really beautiful. And I know, you know, another example of this, and he's not the greatest example, but it is Greg Abbott with what he did with that executive order. Now, agree or disagree on what he should have done with that executive order.
Which one?
The one declaring gender modifications for minors to be child abuse, right?
Yeah.
So there are some disagreements on that, but guess what? He trolled the entire national news media into saying, and letting Americans know that this is happening,
yep.
Gender modification for children are happening, and by the way, Republicans think it's child abuse. Something that like 80% of Americans actually agree on. We poll on this, and even like 60% of Democrats want to ban this stuff for minors.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the issue with the with your average Democrat who votes Democrat is they don't know anything about what's going on.
Exactly.
Yep.
So how, you know, we've got this battle. I think one of the core elements of the culture war is people who are discerning, who watch the news and seek out true information and try and fact check. And you have people who don't. The people who don't are being, you know, hypnotized. I'm just imagining there's Brian Stelter and he's got his, you know, watch going left and right. Don't watch Fox News. Only we can give you the true good information. And I think, who was it? Jake Tapper, who said, you can't read WikiLeaks emails. Only we can do that. Was that Tapper?
No, Cuomo. Cuomo was.
That was Cuomo who did that?
I'm pretty sure it was Cuomo.
No, I think it was Tapper.
Sure.
Maybe.
Either one of them, whatever. Cuomo's gone. But you have regular people who, until you sit down and talk with them, you know, like I've told this before, I have friends who say they'll talk to their parents like, hey, watch Tim's show and hear what he has to say. And they're like, ah, I don't want to watch that conspiracy stuff. And they're like, he's reading CNN.com. Like he's reading Politico polls. They're just giving their thoughts on this and like a critical assessment. And then I actually end up sitting down with my friend and they ask questions. They're like, nah, Trump did this. And I'm like, oh, actually X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, well, I didn't hear that. And I'll pull it up and show them.
Mm-hmm.
Like one of my favorite stories where I was talking about China stealing the DNA from people.
That's and terrifying.
It was an NPR story that China was getting access to people's DNA through COVID testing. And there are people who didn't believe me and they were like, that's conspiracy mumbo jumbo. And I'm like, NPR right here. Mm-hmm. Like I if you don't believe it, I got no problem. I don't trust NPR half the time either. but what is it? Do you trust NPR or not?
Well, but that's the kind of thing that NPR would be incentivized against reporting on, which makes me more likely to trust them about it because their general interest is in promoting information that makes all of the COVID testing and vaccines, et cetera, sound better rather than worse. So if they're willing to say that, it's probably because they have something.
Yeah.
I also think that common sense should take a play, right? Like there's this over expertization thing too as well. Like we have to like read these things and it doesn't matter if it's Fox News, NPR, CNN, MSNBC. If you have a little bit of common sense, you can sniff out BS, right? Like it does. I don't care what degree you have or, you know, if you have a PhD, but whatever.
But we are battling against the Bill Burrs and the Ethan Kleins. Mm. You know, Bill Burr, who went on Joe Rogan and said, look, Joe, I just turn on the TV every 2 weeks and do what they tell me to do. And it's just like, if they told you to walk off a cliff, would you do it? Like you have a limit. You have a red line, right? You get Ethan Klein who's like, you didn't got to think about it, man. You just go to the CDC and you just tell you what to do. And it's just like, yo, throughout history, governments have oppressed people. How could you be a supporter of resistance if you're telling people to just blindly walk in lockstep with the government's mandates? That's what we're battling against.
There's like a complacency and a laziness. Like people don't want to deal with really bad things, right? Like we end up, like, there's like a psychosis around that. Like when things are really bad, we don't want to pay attention. We just, it's a human thing. And that's why it always has, there's a cycle to it.
Well, I'm curious, what would the NRA for Families have to say about this and try to do about these problems?
About all, so basically where we're coming at it is like, start with the basics, right? Like we wanted to get politicians comfortable talking about the transgender issue. Like the left wants to put gender identity into civil rights law. Like, that has major consequences.
Yep.
Men and women's sports, men and women's private spaces, men and women's prisons, like men and women's, homeless shelters. Like there's a lot of really bad things here. And so we started with the sports because that was what politicians wanted to talk about. But in reality, Americans are broken sexually. Like we have disconnected sex from family. We've disconnected it from children. It's now just totally hedonistic, and you're a weirdo if you have six kids. Right? Like
Have you seen the meme where I think it's like nine kids lined up and then the mom's pregnant and then there's like a bunch of leftists saying like, this is disgusting and stuff like that.
Well, but that just shows their misanthropic hand. They hate human life, ultimately.
Yeah.
They really do. They'll never acknowledge it. What they love is pleasure and engaging in pleasure, and they see other human beings' existence as very inconvenient to them because that requires that they set themselves aside and make choices that are for the benefit of others.
What's the article? It's like, in order for there to be a feminist utopia, the family must be destroyed or something like that.
Yeah. No, but that was part of the Marxist movement.
It's true.
Yeah. Well, because you need to, you know, people, this is interesting. Back during Occupy Wall Street, there were two different governments, I don't know what you want to call it. There was the General Assembly, which was everyone gathered around, and then the facilitators effectively controlled what could be said by who and when and how money was spent. But then you had a group of people who tried creating what's called the General Union. And these guys explained it to me that the way the union would work is that every tent at Occupy was a family that knew each other's interests, desires, and needs. And so a representative from each family would discuss with the larger group instead of a group of random people all adhering to perhaps, you know, the authority who facilitate the meetings. I thought it was interesting that their approach from it was, we're a family. We have needs amongst each other. We'll convey those needs to other families and then ultimately see how that greatly, you know, but that was crushed. The General Union was basically wiped out of the park. They were ostracized. They were smeared and lied about.
Like they reinvented the wheel,
yeah.
Right? Like how society works. Like it is organized by families. I think that we've gone. The reality is, and Seamus, you were talking about this earlier. Like we went decades without a like robust lobbying special interest group in D.C. representing families. Like who makes politicians pay a price when they were voting to trans our kids or voting to allow pornography unrestricted? You know, no age verification online.
Well, they say these things don't happen. And the problem is
And it's good that they do.
But so
in the
long run, I think, you know, we're starting to see that the narrative start cracking. People start realizing what's going on with their kids. One of the things I think is really important, out in West Virginia, it's happening. People think they can move to West Virginia, which is the second most Trump supporting state in the country after I think it was Wyoming. They think they're gonna go there and find a red school that's gonna be like middle of the road. Look, we're not here to teach your kids to be religious. We're just going to, you know, teach your kids, let them be kids, play baseball and they'll learn math. And then it turns out that these woke activists are still running for school board in red areas on purpose. They have a mission. They have a cause. They found their purpose. So you get these kids who are going to grade school in West Virginia and they're surrounded by all of the cult wokeism. Mm-hmm. They have all of these books like Whiteness Contracts and stuff like that. And Ibram X. Kendi. And then when you point it out, they call you a liar and say you're making up, and the media protects them.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So human beings have a natural desire to procreate. And it's very strange how over the past 50, 60 years or so, that has been branded as sort of a strange, uniquely religious impulse. At bottom, it's in all of us. And people who are not procreating or reproducing sexually try to find other ways to spread what they are to other people. And so these woke activists, they're essentially the byproduct of a society that has stopped seeing sex as something which is beautiful and unitive and procreative and can literally create a human soul which will outlast the stars and the mountains and everything you've seen in this world and into something that's just there for me to get a little bit of pleasure out of. And so what happens is people become fundamentally restructured towards selfishness in pursuing hedonistic pleasure. And because they're not procreating in the traditional way, they have to make your children like them.
The
because
robots.
That urge doesn't disappear.
Maybe robots.
I think worse, they're animals.
Well, I think robot's a better word than zombie for a lot of people, because there's something special with existence and life in general, mm-hmm. and especially with human life. There's something special, there's unique, the human experience, the feelings that we have. But if you reduce everything to their mechanical functions, mm-hmm. which is often what you'll see from, you know, the modern left, then there is no unique human experience. It's just all a function. It's all random. Mm-hmm. It's all chaos. Mm-hmm. When in reality, I'll put it this way. There's a view among, you know, many atheists and more of the left that, you know, emotions are just, you know, response to stimuli for to help, you know, propagate the species and all that. Humans have these reactions, and all that really is, you know, that life is random. There's nothing else out there. I find that fascinating because I prefer the Dr. Manhattan view of it. Have you read or watched Watchmen?
No. Oh, no. What? Tell me about it.
Dr. Manhattan is this doctor. He's Dr. Osterman, and he is involved in an accident which strips him of his intrinsic field. He then, one day, this body just reforms in the lab where he was working, and he has access to manipulate time and space, and he perceives, you know, throughout, you know, multiple dimensions or whatever. And, so he's effectively a Superman. He's almost, the humans refer to him as a godlike because he has telekinesis and he can teleport. But he says he is not God. He is not omniscient. He just can see his future and past. So anyway, he ends up getting sick of humanity. He leaves and goes to Mars. But this young woman who he had been dating, you know, before, is trying to beg him to come back. And he says, you know, I have seen things, you know, or he says a bunch of things, you know, like that effectively are life doesn't even matter. He says, look at Mars. For, you know, tens of thousands of years, it has existed without life. And could you say it was not better off? What would human, you know, what good would Mars gain by having humans on it? And so he can see the future. You know, in a certain sense, he tells the young woman who's with him that, you know, she'll leave crying. And he says, you keep telling me that I refuse to see, you know, your way, but you refuse to see the world my way, because he wants her to perceive time and everything the way he does. Mm-hmm. So she can understand the sort of futility. So in the story, he then, you know, puts his hand on her head. She can then see past and future, but he can also see her past and future. And what he sees is that her mother was attacked by this other guy who tried to rape her. And she got beaten up by him, but someone came and stopped it. She then later went and met with this guy and had sex with him and then got pregnant with this woman and gave birth to her. And that kind of shocks Dr. Manhattan, who is this very, you know, computeristic, like methodical, lacking emotion. And then he says he was wrong. And he realized that, you know, he thought he had never seen a miracle before, but then he realized that in her, all of these random moments and all of this energy and all of these things that should not have come together in such astronomical odds that you could only describe humans as that miracle. Mm-hmm. So what he was basically saying is like, your mother, you know, he's like, out of all the billions of years, out of all of the different life forms that came and died, it comes down to your mother who loved a man she had every reason to hate, and from it is just you. And all of those things forming this one moment could be described as a miracle. Mm-hmm. And so that's the human experience. I love that mm-hmm. way of thinking about it, that we are these unique entities that took billions of years to finally, you know, come to, or however long you think, that everything that was around us ultimately leads to this point. And it seems like the odds are astronomically, it's beyond comprehension. And that's something magnificent and unique and special. So the people who look at this and say it's random, it's whatever, I'll be like, yo, winning the lottery is random, but boy, is it special when you do. Mm-hmm. Now, your life and your uniqueness is 100 billion times winning the lottery. Now, that's mm-hmm. something truly special and unique.
Mm-hmm. That's a really awesome way to think about it.
A unique human being created by you is
yeah.
more like astronomically at odds than winning the lottery.
Exactly. Yeah. And I want to mention this because I'd be remiss not to correct myself maybe by being pedantic here, but when I mentioned parents creating life or souls, I mean, you are collaborating with God in that creative process?
It's really interesting. So, I've been around the block on this issue, and like, cause I get asked a lot about like gay adoption, right? Like, and you know, I think there's a lot, like, I'm not weirded out by gays. I'm not freaked out by them. But what I think is like, I had this experience with, someone that my family knows where they got married as a lesbian couple and they end up, getting, pregnant. They get a sperm donor. The one has it. And when the baby's born, the spouse is like, well, that's not my baby. Yeah. That doesn't look like me. It wasn't my egg. I didn't birth it. And so they did another thing where like, they had an egg from the other spouse that didn't have the baby implanted into the other mother, and then they had it. But they would fight over which kid was cuter.
Jeez.
Right? And stuff like that. And they, you know, and it's like, I can't do that with my wife. I mean, we'll do it like tongue in cheek, right? Like, oh, he's such a little asshole. Like, you know, he's just like his father. But like, I can't, my kids, but my wife and I's kids, they're actually 50% both of us.
Yeah. Right.
And they're either like, they might look like her or look like me, but they're still made by us. And so there's like this intrinsic unity with the family. And when you have kids and you're married and you know, making new human life.
I was reading something and it said, it was like a meme on Reddit or whatever, but they were like, why do you want to have kids? And the person said, because if I don't, I would be the first life form through billions of years of procreation not to have a child.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And I was like, that's kind of scary if you think about it. Like, every single ancestor that you have had a child.
Yep.
Every single one of them had a child.
Yeah.
And if you don't, that's the end of that chain, of that history, of that whatever you want to call it, something massive and profound and bigger than you ends if you do not have a child.
Yep.
Yeah, well, and I think there are some people who are not called to have children, and that's fine. It's okay for that lineage to end with you. But if you are called to have children, that is a very beautiful thing. That is a very beautiful thing to do. And as I'm sort of mentioning earlier, you know, you're collaborating with God in this creative process. And of course, He creates the soul, but to be a parent and to have a child that you are bringing into the world through His graces and the ability He's given you to do so is such a beautiful and profound thing. And yet as a culture, we don't just have an indifference towards it. We're actually disgusted by it.
And you know, too, you know, I was just mentioning how it's like, you know, having a child is like infinitely like, at more at odds than winning the lottery, like the uniqueness and the rarity of that is something truly special. I mean, and if you're really concerned about money and you'd rather buy the lottery ticket, just think about this. Have the kid. Bring him to Hollywood, you know, and then boom, 18, not even 18 years, maybe you get a child star, then you're rich.
Yeah, then
there you go.
Like,
you know, just put him to work in LA and
not with what they do in Hollywood. Yeah, keep your kid as far away as possible from those people.
Yeah, okay.
Something tells me I can tell you where the Hollywood people will stand on this bill.
Yeah.
They're going to be like, Tim's right, bring your kids.
Yeah.
Like, no, exactly. I was kidding.
Do not ever bring your child here.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Well, this is the world we're in now is that we have two distinct visions of reality, and it's very strange. And this is why I often talk about transhumanism.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you read a lot into it. But clearly, those of us who are not talking about living in a digital world or having an internal identity or anything like that outside of, you know, ourselves, we live in base reality, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
And then this other faction of people, they live in a digital or you know, just a different version of reality. I wonder if the internet is helping create this sense of separate identity from your body. Because people now have a way to go online, especially now with VR, and create avatars, create, you know, facsimiles or representations of themselves. And so, whereas for the most of human civilization, you were your body.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, now we have people who exist in a different space where they engage in commerce and communications, but they create a different version of themselves for these spaces. Even different voices, if they end up speaking, voice changers or otherwise, cartoon versions of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
What happens then when those people enter the metaverse? They will create whatever version of themselves they want. But for those of us that just maintain base reality, live here and, carry on, we're going to have families, we're going to have kids, and we're just going to be like, I'm just some dude here in blue jeans.
I mean, we already see it very much so that people don't want to live in base reality, and what they're trying to do is take their own mental reality, their subjective experience of what the world is, and what their place should be in it, rather than what their place actually is, what they think it should be, and then they're trying to transform their bodies in accordance with that. That's the entirety of the transgender movement.
Truth be told, I would love virtual reality. Skyrim is so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when the new Elder Scrolls come out, I'm going to put that VR on and I'm going to be firing the bow and arrow at some dragons. But the interesting thing to me is that, you know, when I play these games, it's just like first person. It's your hands and they're moving around. I'm still me. I still view myself as me. There's, you know, for me, I don't go into these video games and think I want to be someone else. I just think I want to throw a fireball at a dragon.
Yep.
But there are some people who go into these spaces specifically to escape and to be something else.
Be someone else.
Yep. They go in chat rooms and lie about who they are. They go into video games and create avatars specifically to be a different person. I wonder if one of the issues we just have is at the root, people aren't taught to love themselves.
Yep. Or really how to love anything.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and that's been there's been this huge rise in VR porn. I did this debate series with Brandy Love. She's an active porn star and she's like actually pretty honest. She's a good, I think she ultimately for a porn star, she's pretty great. And a moral person, I think. But the thing is like she was freaked out by VR porn. Cause she was like, I just think it's a little bit too weird. Hmm. I think that, you know, when it comes to sex, it's really important to have another person and to share that with someone else. And virtual reality really is like people trying to escape reality.
Yeah.
And it's terrible.
I think that's where we're going for sure.
And that's what porn is in general.
And look, there is one of the quotes I love to say on the show, you know, every so often is, Google it. You know, tell me who said this, cause I was reading a long time ago. They said that if humans ever meet aliens, we will shake hands not because we overcame nuclear weapons, but because we overcame the Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
And the point of the article was that humans are continually chasing after self-satisfying actions. Like, you know, what do? We create a massive industry for porn. We create food, sugars, and fats and desserts. These are the things that just trigger other reward centers in our brain and all that stuff. And so where will people end up? What I think at this point the article is probably outdated, but I would say at this point we're seeing with the metaverse and everything, most people are going to, they will beg for Neuralink. They will just be like, I don't care who's in charge. I don't care if you can erase my brain. I want to be a magic elf fighting a dragon more than anything. Just get me out of this and they'll take it.
And they'll be dead. There's this weird belief, and transgenderism is the precursor to transhumanism. Mm-hmm.
I disagree on that one. I think you know the issue is we're seeing a whole bunch of identity issues across the board. You've got transracial, you've got other kin, you've got people.
Gnosticism's the root.
But I think ultimately it's just there's a bunch of different trans identity issues that have been affecting us for a long time. Even someone who wants to change their name, they're not happy with who they are. They're not satisfied with it. Mm-hmm. It starts very, very small seeds. I think, for a lot of people, they feel like they're in the wrong body, but it could be for a variety of different ways, you know, like Rachel Dolezal.
Well,
she's the wrong race.
I think it's related to Gnosticism though, the separation of the soul from the body, right? Like Christianity has a totally different understanding, which is that your soul and your body are intricately related, and once those two are separated, that's called death. Yeah. And so I think, you know, if I'm an atheist and I hear about Neuralink and I hear about transgenderism or whatever, you're born in the wrong body, it actually kind of makes sense. Like, if there is no God and your consciousness can, like, be replicated and put onto a hard drive, like, why not? Like, you can technically have a copy of you living forever.
Are you familiar with Otherkin?
Isn't that like when you think you're an animal or something?
They think they're mystical animals.
Yes.
So they're you know, it's not necessarily mystical animals. For a lot of these people, they say they're like, you know, owls, you know, or whatever, or wolves, or they'll say they're like part owl, part cat, or things like that. But for some people, they think they're dragons. They think they're, you know, wyverns, or however you pronounce it.
Yeah.
They think
yeah.
they're mystical creatures that don't even exist. And so that's why I think identity issues are well beyond just transgender. I think we've been seeing this on the internet for a long time. People have, maybe Gnosticism or however you want to explain it, separated their internal self from their physical self.
Mm-hmm.
That to me, I think, is maybe there's something within people that you know, they can fathom the concept at some point, mm-hmm. but you need some kind of catalyst to make it more pronounced, and I think the internet is that catalyst. An opportunity for people to enter a space where they can exist as something different, at least in facsimile.
Well,
right now, you can put on the Oculus, and I did this a while ago. Man, I'll tell you, during lockdown when it first started and we were in Jersey, I went on my deck, I put on the Oculus, and I was on Google Maps, and I was walking around all these different places. Cool. Here's the crazy thing. Before we even moved here, I went to Harper's Ferry, and I like walked around to see what it was like and go into the city and everything like that. But then there was also these chat rooms, and they're really interesting, where you can walk around, and you can create a digital character for yourself. And I make the joke that people walk around like carrots, because there were some people that had like strange, like rutabaga body, like they wanted to be a rutabaga, sure. man. Yeah. And that's and for me, I'm kind of just like, whenever I play these games, I have like a default avatar because I don't care about what this thing is. You know what I mean? Like, I'm me, and to me, I'm just playing a video game. But to some people, they go in and they're like, this is my chance to create something that I would rather be. Mm-hmm. I suppose the real issue might be people just don't like their lives, and they think the grass is always greener. One of the things that really bothers me is when I hear from people, they say, if only I had money, then I'd be able to do things.
Yeah.
And I always tell these people, like, that's not true at all. Ask anybody who runs a business. Having money does not guarantee you the ability to do anything. Some people are like, I wish I could start a successful YouTube channel, but I just don't have the money. And I'm like, dude, I had a phone. All I had was a cell phone when I started it. And then when I started doing commentary, it was just a GoPro. And they're like, well, I don't even have a GoPro. But you have a phone, dude. I know you have a phone. Not everybody does. Fair point. So you can get cheap phones with cameras on it, and you can start somewhere. You can get a webcam for $15. I understand there's a base level. You need a computer or something. A phone can do all of it, really. But people would always say to me, with all of these resources at their fingertips, if only I had money. People seem to think, if only I was X, then I would finally be happy. And I'm just like, if you're not happy with yourself, you know, you're not going to find it chasing after some mythical dragon beast or, you know, truth be told, video games are fun. If I, you know, when I play the, you know, when I use the Oculus, it's fun, you know, and it's going to be really fun when they create, you know, when they have better VR with haptic feedback. I don't know if I'd ever want to get Neuralink, but it is tempting to be able to play video games where you can actually like experience flight and stuff like that. But maybe the issue is there's too many people who are more weak-willed and would rather live in the fake reality where they can feel good all the time, and they would wither away and die if they did.
Yeah, I have a real aversion to it all. I really think that, like, anytime you start to mess with your brain, where, like, the idea that someone could upload thoughts to your brain or download your thoughts, like, that's kind of freaky to me. And that's at the core of Neuralink. And if you, look, I have a Tesla. I love it. It's a great car. It goes 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. I don't care about the environment. If it didn't go 0 to 60 in 3 seconds, I wouldn't have it.
Yeah.
But if you look at this ecosystem that Elon Musk is setting up, right, with Neuralink, SpaceX, Starlink, and Tesla, like, it's a, and the cell phone, is that part of Starlink?
His cell phone?
It's coming, he's coming out with a satellite phone that's hooked up to Starlink.
Cool.
So he'll have a whole ecosystem. And we don't even know, does he have a payment processing system? I mean, I know he helped found PayPal, but that is pretty intense. Like, you would put one guy, and then, I don't know. And then what's the other question? Like, if he gets to Mars, is that his now? I think it'd be pretty cool. You gotta defend it, I guess.
Let's go to Super Chats. If you haven't already, smash that like button. Smash that like button now. Subscribe to this channel. Share the show with your friends. Head over to TimCast.com and become a member. We're gonna have a members only segment coming up for you around 11 or so PM. It will be published. Let's read what you guys have to say. Sean Hirschbach says, hey guys, remember when Alec Baldwin killed a woman?
Oh, yep.
I do remember when he killed a woman. Yeah. You guys remember when Alec Baldwin killed
a
woman?
Yeah, that was
what's
pretty
going
recent,
on with that?
Right?
I don't know. I mean, where's that court case?
I don't know, man. Yeah, why hasn't he been arrested?
Yeah, right.
Yep. Green Blue says Ian is probably sick from that raw aloe drink. Is that? Yeah, he was drinking some like aloe vera thing the other day.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
He said it was really bitter.
Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right. Mike Raider says theory, Joe Biden is not releasing the MiGs to Ukraine because if he does, Putin releases blackmail dirt on Hunter and the big guy receiving payment from the First Lady of Moscow. What's the likelihood? Man, I remember that narrative when they were like, what does Putin have on Trump? And now we're really coming into the, what does Putin have on Biden?
I mean, isn't it all out there? A lot of it's out there.
I mean, truth be told, this is more plausible. What does Putin have on Biden?
That is definitely true.
Yeah.
All those financial dealings, like, we only have scratched the surface on that.
No, yep. Biden's just a good guy. What are you guys talking about?
Hunter Biden? Man.
Come on, man.
Hairy legs.
I got hairy legs.
Murph Try says, Tim, just wanted to let people know that there is a red flag law proposed for Kentucky, SB 278, and that 2A-loving Kentuckians should contact their state reps to let their voice be heard. Definitely.
Yeah.
All right. Vosh says, are you kidding, Tim? Half of Hollywood still thinks he's innocent. In reference to Jussie Smollett getting work in Hollywood. That's a fair point.
Yep.
They're gonna put him on a reality show, and it's going to make money. I mean, we joked that we should do a short film called The Jussie Smollett Story, where we reenact cinematically like what happened and hire Jussie to do it. And it's funny because we joke because we know having Jussie in it would make money. It would get clicks.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then I'm thinking about it. I'm like, they've got to be thinking the same thing.
Yep.
You don't got to like the guy, but you want to watch him.
And you want to make money.
Yeah.
Correct.
Yep. Would you watch the Jussie Smollett Story, Seamus?
I already know it.
But would you watch it?
I would. Liked it. So
if Lifetime made
I like
an hour
to
move,
believe I wouldn't, but if it came down would. To it, there's dude, a chance I might.
So the Batman comes out.
Oh, boy.
With Robert Pattinson. And I'm like, I don't care to see it, really.
We love it.
And then we ended up going to see it. And I didn't like it. But I'll tell you this. If, like, Lifetime announced the Jussie Smollett Story, I would be sitting there with popcorn. I'd have chips and soda. Everybody would be gathered around, and we'd be ready to go the moment. We're like, it's starting. Everyone, shh, shh, shh. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody would want to see it.
Yeah.
Wait. What would a Jussie Smollett Lifetime movie look like?
It would be like...
He comes back to town. He falls in love.
No. It would be the story of how he got text. Yeah.
No, but Lifetime's the woman's network.
No, but you know what I mean. Like, yeah, it's made for TV movie.
No, yes. But it'd be funny to have, like, a women's movie about Jussie Smollett coming back, you know.
Yes.
Oh, my
if, gosh. It would be, like, the week leading up to the attack.
Yeah.
And then it would be, like, the cops would all be like, we're going to frame him. Yeah.
It's the dramatic
And they're, like, planting evidence. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm being set up. Don't you see it?
I'm gonna warn the, this isn't like a major spoiler. I'll warn the audience though. If you wanna know our opinion on the Batman film, I mean, I'm only speaking for myself here, but it's, the arc is that Batman learns to use his platform responsibly. That was the story.
Is that
like
it?
The most social justice-y? I thought so, because at the end when he's talking, again, spoilers, at the end when he's talking to the villains, they go, I am vengeance, which is what he said, and he's been so irresponsible with his platform and what he's been doing in public, and he has to channel his celebrity in a productive way.
It's when, and again, spoilers for those who haven't seen
spoilers.
It.
Spoilers.
So I'm going to wait a few seconds after I say spoilers, and now I'm going to say it. So earmuffs. It's when Catwoman says to Batman, because she doesn't know he's Bruce Wayne, that Bruce Wayne is just another, like, white privilege.
Big part of it. Well, that works into my point, though. Like, he has to question it. He has to use his platform responsibly. He's just a rich white male, and he's never thought about how
you know why I'm annoyed?
Affects people.
Like, I wouldn't say that the Batman is, like, insanely woke, but it is. Mm-hmm. Because white privilege is a psychotic manipulation and lie.
It's true.
So as soon as they entertain it as a concept in a film, as if it's a true thing that exists, you're dealing with cultish propaganda. Let me explain to everybody. Majority privilege exists. Attractiveness privilege exists.
True.
Age, youth privilege exists.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of biases
I own up to it, you know?
that people have. And the reason why, you know, I say white privilege is a lie is that white privilege only exists in a country with a majority white population. Mm-hmm. And try going to other countries and they'll just be like, they have a word for you. They have a special word for you in many countries referencing you as a, you know, foreign white person.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
White privilege extends only as far as the cash in your pockets and the cash of these countries. So it's, you know, how about we just remove race from it? It's wealth privilege, which is basically everything.
Class privilege.
Yep. All right. Let's see what we got here. Heavy Duty says, anybody going to talk about how us lower class citizens are being cheated out of our tax returns by the IRS, finding mistakes on our returns? Yep. That's how it goes, man. Everybody knows, man. The poor stay poor, the rich get rich.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's how it goes. Everybody knows. All right. Jacob Siebert says, Hey, Tim and Cast, I would suggest getting Nigerian dwarf goats because they're a lot easier to handle. I would also suggest a herd dog like a blue heeler and some other large breed to scare coyotes, my personal experience. Luke Rosiak was on the show the other day, and we were talking about goats. He said, full-size goats, what do you get, like a gallon of milk per day?
Yeah.
And he's like, if you want to drink milk, then get it. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to drink that much milk, man.
That's a lot.
And he said,
I'll help you out, bro.
Yeah.
Get big and
strong. He was saying the dwarf goats have like 6% milk fat, which is great for cheese, but that might make you fat. And I'm like, considering how many people we have, I think making cheese is like the right way to go.
Yeah, bro.
I don't know how to make cheese.
Also, if it hits the fan, getting fat off the food you have is not the worst problem to have.
Well, I'm excited for the stuff we're building.
I thought you were going to say I'm excited for it to hit the fan. I was like, wow.
Maybe.
The good news is I think the patio that the truck drove over the other day, we're going to be able to, we can just clean it off.
Yeah.
So we were worried because they just laid the epoxy and then pressing dirt into it would push it into the glue and you have to sand it off. But it looks like, for now, we're not entirely sure. Some of it has come off, but not in the deepest area. Mm-hmm. So otherwise, they got to sand the patio. It's going to be a disaster. It's going
to
suck.
Yeah, if you want a full-size goat, my family used to have French Alpine goats, which were really good, really solid, adorable babies, and a lot of milk.
Milk.
Yeah.
I mean, what about a cow? I like cow milk.
Oh, yeah. Cows are awesome.
How many gallons do they produce a day?
I'm not sure.
That's a good question. I assume they're a lot more difficult to maintain.
But then what do you do with the baby cow? Like, you got to get the cow pregnant. So do you like ask some dude to bring his bull over?
Yeah, I think that's got
to be like you put up a sign saying like cow seeking bull, call this number.
It's like a dating app.
I guess like, or do you bring your cow to the bull and the bull like, you know, gets down to it and then you bring the cow back and then you get milk?
Tim, I'm sure they have ways to do it.
I'm hearing from Google.com, the website, that most dairy cows are milked 2 to 3 times per day. On average, a cow will produce 6 to 7 gallons of milk.
Woo! Oh. Per day.
Yeah, per day.
Whoa, one cow will make 6 to 7 gallons per day?
Yeah, yep, that's what I'm reading.
That's incredible.
This is from Google.
Whoa.
Right?
That's why goat's a little better.
Oh, this is, so here's the second result. So I'm getting even deeper into my investigative research. It says milk production per cow has more than doubled in the last 40 years. In the U.S., the average dairy cow produces more than 7.5 gallons of milk per day.
Oh,
that's crazy.
Snap.
Yeah. Wow.
Goats are a good compromise.
Yeah. All right. R. Valera says, if the U.S. immediately started on an accelerated program to build nuclear power plants with the aim of providing 25% of the country's power, what are your thoughts on the economic effects? Can we get free of Saudi oil? Yes, I certainly think so, and we should. I'm a big fan of nuclear power, especially the newer generations. What do you think about nuclear?
I love it. I mean, I've seen Chernobyl. I mean, it's incredible what happened there, but that was all basically corruption. Nuclear power, I don't think we built a new nuclear power plant in America since like the 70s, right? Or am I misremembering that?
That sounds right, unfortunately.
We've got such better technology now than in the 70s, and we haven't really had any major catastrophes here in America.
Yeah.
Like Three Mile Island, I think.
No deaths.
Yeah, no deaths. Nothing Chernobyl-y.
Yeah.
Chernobyl.
All right. Sean L. says, former Army intel collector here. Most news outlets are very wrong, read the military might, of Russia, China versus the U.S., they overstate their capabilities and understate ours. Most people have no idea how strong we are. Nukes are the issue. I agree. I think the U.S. is strong, and I think there's probably a lot of weapons the U.S. has that we don't know about. I also think the U.S. is split between woke cultists and, you know, regular people, and that's going to cause very serious problems. I think that's going to cause very serious problems, you know, on the battlefield if you end up with, you know, maybe not. Maybe people who know better than I are going to be alive. You don't have time to think about that. So it's just, you know, fight and survive and get the mission done. But I think when people start seeing the world completely differently from each other, it'll cause very serious problems. Carrie, my girl, says, Justice with Jussie is the new show. LOL.
Yeah,
that's great.
That's
Justice
awesome.
With Jussie.
Let's do it.
Yeah, look, Seamus, there are so many cartoon opportunities for you on this one.
I know. Look, it's about narrowing down what I'm going to focus on.
What's a good conspiracy film? Like a whodunit. You have like a Jussie Smollett whodunit where he's trying to figure out who framed him.
Who actually framed him?
Yeah.
Who framed Jussie Smollett? No, it's a really good question. It's a really good question. We may never find the real hoaxer. I don't know.
It
was Tim.
Very angry citizen says, couldn't take living in Philadelphia anymore. Crime is up. Quality of life is down. Filth everywhere. As of 11:41 a.m. today, I'm a West Virginia resident just outside of Morgantown. Sent Liz my resume. God bless you all. Congratulations on escaping Philadelphia.
Yes.
We were on the other side of the river, and it was just brutal, man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, these cities have fallen apart.
Angry yep. citizen.
Javi J says Smollett out on appeal, but Kane Velasquez was denied bail. What an upside-down timeline we are living in. Who is that? I don't know who that is.
He is the guy who went out and took revenge on the person who assaulted his child.
Oh, yes.
The former MMA fighter.
Yep. Joshua Bro says, Jussie is out on bail pending the appeal. Is it quite possible the appellate judge issued a harsher sentence when he is found guilty again? The system wants people to shut up and take it. I bet this is a bad idea for Jussie. I think Jussie is an egomaniac sociopath. And that the reason he was screaming, I'm not suicidal, was because he was planning on killing himself. Mm-hmm. So they had to restrain him to a bed with straps because he would want to harm himself to create a legacy of that it was a conspiracy the whole time.
Yep.
Nobody will believe it. He's an egomaniac and a sociopath, and he's also really dumb.
Really dumb.
Really dumb. Mitzo Plick says, Taco Bell is to Mexican food what strawberry candy is to eating an actual strawberry. There was like a lawsuit recently I read about where some guy sued Pop-Tarts or something.
How dare he?
Because he was like, it says strawberry, but there's no strawberries in it.
What?
And then the judge said something like, I don't think any reasonable person would look at what's on the box and assume it's a strawberry.
So I'm That's great.
Yeah.
Well, it might not be real strawberry, but sometimes it's just what you want.
I mean, no. To be fair, it does literally say the word strawberry.
True. Technically
it does.
Wait, there are actually strawberry, like, preserves in it?
I think there probably
strawberry
is some
flavored. I don't know.
We can look it up.
I'm curious.
Ian Crossland with a super chat saying, Seamus, please make O'Donald's in Freedom Tunes and make the O'Donald's worker an ethnic Irish guy.
Yes.
So I don't know. He said ethical Irish guy.
But oh, no such thing.
Lydia, I can't believe that you would beat me to
my
it.
Chance.
Like
that was pretty good, right?
Is that what you were going to say?
Yeah, I mean, she beat me to it. I was actually deciding whether or not I would malign an entire group of people based on their ethnicity. But before I could make that decision, Lydia did.
You're welcome.
Ian,
But Lydia's Irish, right?
Yeah, I am.
So
yeah,
it's allowed.
I knew there's a reason I didn't trust her. So Ian is asking about O'Donnell's, which harkens back to McDonald's, which it's possible that this particular McDonald family was Scottish, but MC is Irish, as the super chat above testifies from Ryan MC Cafferty.
He's Irish.
Mick Cafferty.
Look at that.
Mick is Irish.
Well, all right,
don't
then.
Trust
Would you get sued if you made a burger place called O'Donald's? Because I totally want to do it now.
That's
an interesting question.
It just depends on what the logo looks like.
It'll be a golden O.
W?
Yeah.
A big O.
Yeah.
I don't know. I almost want to do it just because it'd be funny.
It would be really funny.
Let's do it.
Or at least, like, get the logo done.
Yeah.
What can we do? Colonel Papa O'Donald's?
Yeah.
Just mix all
I like it.
Yeah. I tell you, you know what my idea for a restaurant is? So you know when you go to Panda Express, you like walk up and you're in line and they have
you
all...
You go there a lot, don't you?
No, I don't at all. So, but you know how you go in and just you're in line, like, and Chipotle, you go in line and they have all the food?
Yeah.
My idea for a restaurant is they have, it's like Panda Express because they have like the different kinds of food, the orange chicken or spicy beef or whatever they have. But this place has orange chicken, chicken tikka masala, and pad thai.
Ooh.
So you go there and they have those three things and then maybe other sides.
Cause
those I think were like the top three Grubhub ordered items or something.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, do one restaurant that serves those three things and you and all your friends could go there and you walk up and you're like, I'll do the orange chicken. They put in the thing and you get rice and all of it's served with rice anyway.
Yep.
So it's like, there you go, man. I think I'd rather go for chicken tikka masala, to be honest. That's what I'm all about. That's my idea for a restaurant. Although I really, really would love to have like a little fast food burger joint. Just like maybe like a little sit down place. We do the quick burgers and, you know, some fries.
Yeah, O'Donald's.
O'Donald's.
Yeah.
McPool's.
McPool's.
You'd definitely get sued if you did that. If you put MC in front of your name.
So here's
like
the
that,
question.
Probably.
What if your last name was actually McDonald and you wanted to open a restaurant?
No, I don't think you could.
Yeah.
Yeah, to be honest. It's pretty messed there was up. There's a hot dog place in Chicago I used to go to called Donald's, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
We used to go there when we were in the city.
Oh, yeah. You're familiar
delicious.
With
delicious.
Yeah,
yes.
It is a really good place, to be honest. All right. Ken says, Russian ruble is up almost 54%. So much for the economic warfare. Bet you won't hear that in the mainstream media. Russia has a massive stockpile of gold. world abandoning USD as a reserve currency. Yep.
Why would they do that?
Buy what you got to buy now before it's too late.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, let's grab some more. Padre Mortalis says, remember that by the Mexicans defeating the French, it helped prevent the French from helping the Confederacy, therefore helping the Union win the Civil War. Good holiday to celebrate in the U.S. Oh, yeah, Cinco de Mayo. Mm-hmm. That's right.
It's a great holiday.
Roberto Lara says, I was going to check Occupy Democrats if they're praising Jussie. Guess they blocked me on Facebook and Twitter. Wow. Huh. So welcoming. Real facts. So honest.
Yeah.
Yep.
It blocks a lot of people, I guess.
Unspecial Noob says, Tim, Timmy, Timothy, please, oh, please name the next rooster of Chicken City, Dwayne the Cock Johnson.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
That's a good one.
That is pretty good.
Terry loves
that
it.
That is a good
one. I saw one earlier. I was watching the chicken feed over there.
Oh, yeah.
And someone said, Cluck Norris.
Oh, I like that, too.
Cluck Norris. I thought that was pretty good.
Well, the original idea we had was that all of our original chickens have regular names, and their last names are bird puns. So we've got Sarah Avenberg.
Uh-huh.
We have Roberto Beaks. And he's the father of all of the babies. So basically every new baby is a Beaks, part of the Beaks family.
Uh-huh.
So Roberto Jr. Beaks. Then we have Vanessa Peckingham. Margaret Hatcher. That was brilliant.
I like
that. That was Andy,
one.
I'm pretty sure.
I'm sure it
Margaret
was. Hatcher's that's
pretty,
genius.
That's pretty very good. That was very good.
Margaret Hatcher. That was brilliant. And Carol Cluck. One of my favorites is, though, is Katarina Kuritsa. Yeah.
I like that.
Russian for bird?
Russian for chicken.
Ah, gotcha.
Yeah, the name is Catherine Chicken.
That's like, cute.
We just literally called her Chicken. So I think it's great.
Names. Yeah, no, it's very good.
Roberto Pollo.
Look, it works.
Yeah.
That's right. And now we have, I think, downstairs right now, 24 babies.
There's a lot.
So many.
Yeah, because we also had some delivered.
Yeah.
And then we've got
so cute.
34 incubating.
Mm-hmm.
So out of the 22 incubated, we did the first incubation. Only 12 actually made it. Some of them appear to not be fertilized, and one of them stopped developing halfway through. And
yeah. It's my wife and I, to keep our kids busy during COVID, and also we were kind of worried that the world's going to fall apart. We got a bunch of chickens, and it's devastating. Like when we did, I think we hatched six, and only three came.
Oh, man.
And, really?
It was just devastating because you just wait and wait and wait. It's a fun little hobby, though.
You know what the sad thing is, though? You really should not expect to have chickens and treat them like pets that you care about, to be honest.
No.
Because we've got, we care about our chickens. We love our chickens, but you can't really have a bunch of girl and boy chickens. You can't do it. So we have Roberto and Roberto Jr., and they have to be retired off to the boys' dormitory, which means they're going to go off to other property, and they're going to live with all the boys, because you really just can't have all these babies that are being born. The boys, once they get to a certain age, off to the boys' dorm.
Yeah.
Because all the roosters can live together. I am really, really excited for when we unleash like 50 fully grown roosters onto the property to just like graze.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering what, you know, predators would think. Because roosters are...
They're mean.
Yeah. And, you know, a fox could take one rooster for sure, but not 50.
Not 50.
I mean,
no,
army
no, no.
Of
that
roosters
fox is dead.
Yep. Just imagine the fox is like crawling through the tall grass seeing a rooster.
He thinks it's all hens. He doesn't know.
He's going to
Well, he
get
just
it.
Sees the one rooster and he's like, I'm going to eat this, you know... Foul,
yeah.
And then all of a sudden he jumps for it, and you just hear like all this insane, and they all just run at it, and they're jump kicking it and scratching it and pecking it, and then the roosters eat the fox.
We need a chicken cartoon series, like a chicken cartoon series.
We have one, I think.
Chicken?
Yeah, the Kent one.
This, well, actually, they went to this guy named Kent.
Oh, I know. Oh,
to animate. No, Kent's
great.
Pretty cool.
He's so funny.
Kent's pretty cool. We love Kent.
Yeah, so we do like, we have cartoons in our vlog periodically, and some of them are just like, you know, the chickens doing chicken stuff. Yep.
They're awesome.
JC says, read No Winter Lasts Forever, a vigilante thriller about mass shootings by Jonathan Epps.
Oh, interesting.
Interesting. CD says, hello from Scotland. Can confirm MacDonald is Scottish and MacDonald is Irish. Seamus, what are your thoughts on the statements of Pope Francis today and the consecration of Russia and Ukraine on March 25th?
Oh,
that's a good question. So I heard about the consecration of Russia and Ukraine on March 25th.
What does that mean?
That's very beautiful. So he's going to consecrate Russia and consecrate Ukraine. I can't really give any more details than that. I didn't hear his statement from today. You may have. You're also Catholic.
I didn't hear the statement, but there's something big about consecrating Russia to Ukraine. It's all related. I'm sorry, consecrating Russia to God. It's all related, like the Fatima appearances and Yeah, basically, Mary told those three little kids that saw her that if that the Pope or the Church needed to consecrate Russia to God, and if he didn't, that Russia would spread her errors all throughout the world, and never happened for some.
Yeah, it's interesting. So this is interesting because this is a little beyond my pay grade, but there's discussion over whether Russia was consecrated under John Paul II because there was a consecration of the world that we were sort of told was a consecration of Russia, but it's argued that to consecrate something is to set it aside. Mm-hmm. So yeah, but it, so that that's part
what
of
is
why
it, what does it mean? Is it a special thing for Russia? It's good for Russia or what?
It's like, to, isn't it to, let me double check, but I believe it's to consecrate Russia to Mary's Immaculate Heart.
Yeah, it's basically saying, like, I don't even know what consecrate. It's kind of like a better blessing. Mm-hmm. It's like a blessing and a dedication. Like, you are now going to be serving God.
Well, all right then. Interesting. All right, Alex says, Tim, I've had enough. Banning elote is the last straw. Cancel Chicago.
Right.
Yeah, we were pissed. We would go to Vidom Park. That's where we would skate. A tennis court, we'd skate in there. And then this, like, working class dude, you know, probably an immigrant or something, he's coming up with a hard, honest day's work, and he says, young friends, I have come to bring you delicious corn with mayonnaise on it. And we would run up and we'd be, like, throwing money at him because it's good.
It's really good.
It's amazing.
And it was a service provided to us that we appreciated. And then one day they stopped showing up. They also had these little, like, orange wheel looking things. I don't know what they're made of. And they had, So they had like different kind of snacks. I think they might have had pork rinds too.
Like
it's like orange crunchy things that look like wheels.
That sounds good.
And like we would get corn.
I'm hungry.
Some people would just go for the corn and the cob.
Yep.
And then they, you know, put all the stuff on it and you just eat it.
That's preferred.
Yeah, put it in the cup. And it's just, it's crazy to me that they took that away from us. You know what started happening then? Ice cream trucks started coming.
Oh.
So we went from eating corn.
Good for you.
To ice cream.
Better for you.
Man. Yeah. Man, that ice cream guy was crazy though. True story. The ice cream guy who would come to the park didn't know what money was. Totally serious. Yeah, a weird thing happened where it was like a dollar for an ice cream cone. Someone went up to him and was like, I only got 80 cents. Is that enough? And the guy was like, he didn't speak English. He was like, yeah. And then the kid put the money in his hand. He was like, oh, thank you. And then he went and told everybody, like, I just gave him 80 cents. He said it was okay. And so people were like, okay.
Sweet.
So then people went up like, how about 50 cents? And he was like, yeah, and he would take it, give him the cone.
Man.
And we were like, and then one day people realized, like, I'm going to offer him something else. And someone gave him like a bike peg. They walked up and they had it in their hand. Like, they found it in the trash and they were like, here. And they put it in his hand and he gave him an ice cream cone. And then people were like, what? So then people would give him handfuls of wood chips.
What?
They would give him like shattered bits of plastic and he would accept it. True story. Serious. It was weird.
Wow.
And then one day he showed up and someone tried giving him wood chips from the playground and he was like, no. And then inside the machine was a dollar taped to like the side and he would look at it and point
he
at
got
it.
Got smart.
Yeah, it was really weird. It was really, really weird. Yeah,
that
south side.
That is very odd.
Yeah, I don't know. Strange stories, man. Strange stories. All right, let's see. Laura T. says, please cover the DA dropping the charges against the lefty security guard, Matthew Doloff, who shot Lee Keltner. What's that about? I don't know what that's about.
Yeah, I don't know what that is.
Yeah, no idea. We'll have to look into it, I suppose.
Yeah.
All right. Raymond G. Stanley Jr. says, Tim, quote, the two most important days in life are the day you were born and the day you discover the reason why.
Correct.
Mark Twain. Any thoughts on that at all? What is it meant to mean? The reason why you were born? Like your purpose in life?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. Mm. I was born to complain on the internet, I suppose.
Heck yeah.
Discovered that. Here we are. 36 years old. It only took me, 20 some odd years. 28 years?
Figured out.
Yep.
Perfect.
Glycerin Go says, coming from your Keen and Emmons podcast about cuties, I'm reminded of the beginning of Brave New World. Do you think we're heading in that direction where taboos are being broken for the sake of it? I feel like there's more taboos than ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know about breaking it for the sake of it. I think people want to play life on God mode, like video games.
Yeah.
They're tired. It's a big mistake. Mm-hmm. You guys have played video games, I imagine, of course.
Mm-hmm. A little bit. Not extensively.
So, you know, let's say you're playing Fallout 3, one of my favorite games ever. Well, on your PlayStation, you can play the game as defined by the parameters of the game. So you find weapons, you go on missions, you win the game. On a computer, however, you have access to what's called console commands, where you can basically spawn objects, cheat. You can do whatever you want. And after a while of playing the game, you're like, I would like to do things I can't normally do and have the game be easy. So you make yourself invincible, or you make yourself bigger, or you give yourself infinite weapons, but the game becomes boring fast. Mm-hmm. Because there is no game when you have access to anything and everything you want.
That's true.
So I wonder if what might actually happen is that when people go into the metaverse and they get to experience a virtual world where they can do anything, they say, it's boring.
Yeah. Well, isn't there a line like that in the original Matrix? Where he says something like the original Matrix was blissful, but the human brain rejected it.
They needed struggle and conflict and strife. Because when it was perfect, people just reject it. And that's probably it. It's boring.
It gets boring. Yeah, I remember when I was a youngin', I discovered debug mode for Sonic the Hedgehog, that if you just press the controller certain ways, you could create whatever objects you want. And the game got very boring very quickly. Yep. Just like, there's nothing to play for.
I think a lot of people really want us to open up O'Donnell's.
Yeah.
O'Donnell's.
O'Donnell's.
Someone said O'Donnell's. And
you know what?
You get past
the change
shepherd.
You want to see in the world. That's right. Why don't you guys open it up?
You do.
I'm going to open a burger shop called Seamus's.
What? Why? You can't do that to me.
And the funny thing is, like, I got to be honest, Seamus, it will be hard for people to, like, figure out
pronounce
how to
it. It's true. Because, like, that Seamus's? Why don't I go there? I know.
But it'll be like S-E-A-M-U-S-E-S.
Dude, when I was a youngin, let me tell you another youngin story. I was competing in a high school film festival, and, you know, my name's been butchered really bad, but I got the announcer referring to me as Seamstress Copland when I won an award.
Seamstress
Copland.
That's
I was
amazing.
Like, well, you know what? That's just
it's like Cooper.
This is my burden.
I had a friend named Sean.
Uh-huh.
S-E-A-N.
Yeah.
And we had a substitute teacher who came in, was doing roll call, and she was like, Scene? What? And then everyone laughed. It's like, he raises his hand.
Dude, I knew someone whose name was Sean, or I suppose you could say should have been Sean. It was spelled S-E-A-N, but, like, he and his family pronounced it Seen.
What?
Really?
Yeah.
That's not right.
Not common.
Huh.
Mm. Not common.
That must have confused a lot of people, too.
That's annoying.
Can you imagine? You think it's a joke, right? Like, oh, no, actually, it's Seen.
Yeah, jeez.
Dasher says, World War III will be called the Great Oil War if the Saudis switch from selling the oil from U.S. dollars to the Chinese yuan. It will create more chaos than World War II, but only to China. So it's just like they'll still be selling, you know, oil for dollars, except to China.
That's where it
but
starts.
Once that happens,
yeah.
China's currency is instantly stronger, and then international investment can move in for China way more. So the amount of value China will gain from that one move and the amount of value that the U.S. dollar will lose from that one move is massive. Mm-hmm. So buy it while you can before it's too late, I suppose. But I think inflation is on the way. All right, we'll get one more. Brand Dizzle says, name the restaurant Sea Muses.
Sea Muses.
Sea Muses.
I like
that. And it'll be Seamus as a mermaid singing a siren song.
Yeah, of course.
Ooh, like
that's what
this.
I usually do. Just be natural.
Yeah. There you go. All right, everybody. If you haven't already, smash the like button, subscribe to the channel, share the show with your friends. Head over to timcast.com and be a member so that you can watch the members-only show that is coming up around 11 or so p.m. is when we publish it. As a member, you're helping support all of our journalists, so it's greatly appreciated. You can follow the show at TimCastIRL basically everywhere, except TikTok. We were banned there. Ooh. You can follow me at TimCast. Terry, you want to shout anything out?
Yeah, no, this was a great time. I really enjoyed the conversation. You guys keep me on my toes. And I have a bunch of family friends from back home who have been texting me this whole time. So, yeah.
Right on.
This is great.
Awesome.
Cool, man.
Yeah, it was awesome having you on. I'm really looking forward to the discussion on the after show. I want to maybe get more into
we'll talk
your
families
foundation.
Stuff.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. Also, I want to issue a correction here. I said this, maybe I'm being a little pedantic with myself, and I sort of touched on it, but with the creation of souls, I was discussing about sex as procreative and creating souls, of course. As Catholics, we believe God creates souls, so I don't want to mislead people about the teaching there. I want to make this point, you guys should definitely check out Freedom Tunes. We're going to be releasing a cartoon tomorrow. I'm going to describe it very dryly, but it's just basically on how World War II nostalgia is constantly being thrown at us over the years to encourage us to fight new wars, and we continually fall for it for whatever reason. I hope we don't this time. Thank you very much for watching, and we'll see you on the after show.
Very cool. I saw a suggestion in the chat for Jesse Pullet for one of the chickens, which I think is a great name. Please keep sending me all your suggestions. You guys can send me your suggestions for chicken names over on Twitter at Sarah Petchlet and on Minds.com as well.
I'd feel bad for that chicken. I can't do that.
Jesse Pullet.
Yeah.
It's adorable, though. I like it.
All right, everybody. We will see you over at TimCast.com. Thanks for hanging out.
Bye, guys.